All right, we're going to call the meeting of the Board of Technical Registration to order. We can have a roll call, please.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore. Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Foos.
Here.
Jason Madison. Edward Marley. Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Excellent, thank you. So we have a couple of items on motion to deems and another legal issue with the AG at 9:30. We will start then with the minutes from the last meeting.
Do you call to the public?
Oh, I am sorry. We will start with a call to the public. Does anybody want to address the board? On an item that's not on the agenda? Okay, if it's on the agenda, we'll address it at that time. Thank you. Anybody else want to address the board? Okay. Thank you. So we'll start with the adoption of minutes from the last meeting. I'll open it up for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I move we accepted the minutes as presented.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a second. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Minutes are adopted. While we have the AG item at 9:30, maybe you'd like to get started with the couple of items that should be somewhat quick. So we can move to 7A, which is the case of Eric Glover and the application for alarm agent certification. Is Mr. Glover here? Would you please come up? Good morning. Please state your name for the board.
Eric Glover.
Thank you. Mr. Glover, so you applied for a certification as alarm agent.
Yes, sir.
And the board wanted to hear from you because there were some issues in your past. So if you'd like to make a statement to the board, we're all ears.
I don't really know what to say, but I mean, I was young. Yes, I got in trouble. And I have to fess up. I can't point no fingers. I'm here by myself. So, I mean, I'm asking for a second chance if possible. I've never in my life had an alarm license or even knew I could get one. But when I went to school, some people were telling me, you know, you shouldn't do it because you might not make it. Or I just kept pushing. I graduated with honor to do what I need to do. Never been in trouble ever since. I'm in a new state. So, doing good for myself.
Any questions from the board? I had a question, Mr. Glover. On the packet, you explained a couple of the items that were issues, but I don't know if it was incomplete or if I missed it. I didn't see an explanation for the
2001.
The theft issue, retail theft in 2008. Was that the right date? There was a For all the other stuff, it was discussed, but there was a theft and retail theft that I didn't see. Do you recall what that was? This is one was in Park City, Illinois in 2002. Was the theft. And then the other one was Zion, Illinois in 2008.
I believe I wrote them in there. I'm not sure, but it's so long ago. You know, I mean, whatever I need to do, I'll get it done for you. But I believe I wrote it in that letter that I had to write to the board. I tried to touch on every piece of matter that you guys asked me to do.
Okay. Well, I don't see if somebody can show me where it is. I'd appreciate it. My concern is that, obviously, you know, as an alarm agent, one of the important things is knowing that they can know that they're not going to have any issues when you're in their home.
I understand.
So I think that's relevant, and maybe, you know, if nobody can find it in the packet, if you can tell us a little bit about what happened in those instances.
Okay. If I can remember basically what it was. I mean, yes, I was around wrong people, but like I said, I'm not here to point fingers at no one. I was in the right place at the wrong time or at the wrong time. You know, I mean, yes, it happens. I got in trouble for it, so like I said, I can't blame no one. And I understand your matter of being in people's homes now and standing up as a man. Hey, I realized what happened. I faced my consequences. I did everything I needed to do. I've never been to prison. I've never been in trouble ever since any of these incidents. So I understand the severity of how you all think and what needs to be done for me to get my license.
Okay. So would you be able to tell us about those two incidents, those two theft incidents?
Yes. If I can remember what they were for and what the situation was.
Okay.
I don't have the reports anymore of.
Okay.
Yes, that was the one in Zion where, right, I was with some people and I paid for it. As it states, I paid for it. I went to another store and took it back and they're blaming me, so I didn't argue the fact. They didn't find it. When they searched my car, they searched me. I went to jail, yes. Whatever they did with the other people or what happened with them, I don't know. But I had a receipt, I had everything, and this is what they called it. So, and you know, when it comes to the law and the person that's accused, I didn't have a lawyer. I'm young. I didn't know. So I had to take the fall for it.
Okay.
Do you have two daughters?
I got three, sir.
How old?
My oldest is 18. My youngest is 6. My 9-year-old will be 9 on Halloween. So I understand.
Yeah,
I have to take care of them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is why I didn't get in trouble ever since.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
Thank you, sir.
That's the only one I have a record of.
Okay.
That was a PlayStation where he purchased it and then returned it to another store.
Okay.
The details should have been in the packet.
That was the 2008?
That was 2008.
Okay. Okay. Anybody have any other questions? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move we approve the application for Mr. Glover, based on his comments today and the fact that he's has not any problems the last basically 10 years.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Mr. Glover, and take advantage of the opportunity.
Thank you all so much. I'm going to let y'all know I won't let you down.
Thank you.
Good answer. I got one question. How long does it take to receive the license? Because I know, you know, where the job that I'm working, he's going to want to know.
It won't take very long. It'll be about a week from today to receive it.
So it'll come in the mail?
Yeah, we'll probably grant it this week and receive it.
Okay. Thank you all.
Just a question on that. Could, like, the boss call in today if he said, he goes back to I passed, could he call in and just get a word from
the office here? He can look on the, it's immediate on the website. As soon as we grant it, they'll be able to look, he can look up his name and find his ID number. So the boss could find out today.
So that means the website's working?
That's an item for later. Mr. Noel.
Okay.
Okay, next we're going to handle item 7B, Eric Schaff, alarm agent application 171273. Good morning, Mr. Schaff.
Good morning.
Could you please state your name for the board?
Eric Schaff.
Kind of busy for Eric.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming. Appreciate it. Your case is similar to the last one. I was wondering if there's anything you want to tell the board that we should consider on deciding on your license.
Well, I did submit my letter of explanation, and you know, on my behalf, this is in the past. I was 18 years old when it first initially happened, nearly 20 years ago.
It was an act, you know, victimless crime. I wasn't sure what I was doing at the right time. I didn't know what I was doing if it was the wrong thing to do at that point in time. I just wasn't aware. It was just in my letter that I wrote. It was an accident. I didn't feel that I did the right thing at the time. I paid for my consequences. And I'm a changed person. I've moved out to Arizona. I've been here for nearly 10 years. I have two beautiful daughters that depend on me for my work. I haven't been in trouble. And I'm looking for this approval to where I can do this job and continue doing what I've been able to do.
Thank you. Any questions?
I'll make a motion that we approve. Gene, do you want to say something?
Well, I'm just concerned about being, I guess, a sex offender and the connotation that that would have by granting access to homes to a known sex offender without the particulars of this. It's just the appearances of licensure or giving, I just want, eyes wide open on this, that we are granting access to individual residences to an applicant that has had, although it may be by the documentation a singular instance, on the record as a registered sex offender. And so, it's just a precedent that, we just need to be aware of, that giving access to homes with a registered sex offender without knowing any of the details, any of the particulars. It just has that chemistry or that, that appearance. And it may be that, we can make a singular exception, but I'm just concerned about the connotation that that has. He is on the list for 30 years, according to his information. I guess almost 20 have...
17.
17 have expired. So it is quite a long time. I just have reservations. That's I just wanted to make that known to the board. Okay. I don't really know if there's anything you might want to inform us that are mitigating.
Sure, I've actually been selling home security systems until recently, in the years past, almost for 7-8 years. And then I've been under the direct supervision of my supervisors, so it hasn't been an issue. It wasn't a victim crime. It was two consensual young adults that I didn't know what was right or wrong at the time, and the only reason why it came to this is because she would. The girl's going to get in trouble, so she, saved herself and told her parents. And once the parents found out, that they wanted to drop the charges, but back in Michigan, the prosecutor there was on his way out and wanted to make an example of me. And my attorney suggested I just took a plea, and that's what happened. So this... If the cards fell the right way, it wouldn't have been on my record. I'm not the person that this labels me as, and I haven't had any incidents moving forward. It's not something that's going to happen again. And I've been doing in-home sales for a long time, and people respect me and who I am, and I respect them. I do understand, your concern, but... rest assured, this you know, it was important for my family.
Well, I thank you to point out that it was a singular incident, that there has been no other repetition or recidivism in your class. Thank you.
And I think, you know, the statutes, when they first came out for alarm agents, they were absolutely black and white. I mean, if somebody had stolen a CD 20 years ago, they couldn't get registered. Now it's more flexible. I think it depends more on our judgment. So I think each case will be different. But I see in his case, as you said, it's a single incident. It was when he was a teenager. There were some mitigating circumstances where I can see, you know, I should get registered.
Okay.
So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. So we're voting on the motion to grant registration. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Thank you. Good luck, Mr. Schaap.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, we have hearings are at 9:30, so let's go back to 6A1 and start in the beginning. I think just take care of a few quick ones here. 6A1 is case HI 18004, Stephen Itami, if that's correct. Home inspector certification 62417. And this is about a home inspection in Cave Creek, Arizona. On July 12th, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, while conducting a home inspection at the reference address, failed to adhere to the standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors. I think the main contentions was that pressure testing was outside the scope of a home inspection, and that the use of an infrared thermometer is a common way. Whether that's a common way home inspectors test cooling systems. We have two case assessments that are recommending dismissal. So
I move we stand on the assessments and dismiss the case.
Second.
All in favor of dismissal?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Next, we got case 6B1. This is AL17-014, Michael DeLay, alarm controlling person with Red Hawk Fire and Security. We have a signed consent. This was an issue of a company dropping their alarm business registration mistakenly and then getting current again. Are they current again?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So we have a consent agreement that recommends letter of reprimand, administrative penalty of $500, and cost of investigation of $324.
I move we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Case 6B2. HI 17-023. This is John Hagg, certified home inspector number 5226, expired since last year. The registrant in this case is incarcerated on a conviction of aggravated domestic violence, and then was, while on probation, had a couple more issues. So he's in prison in Tucson at this time. After the current consent agreement that he signed was to voluntarily surrender his certification.
I move we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second.
I'd like to open up for some discussion. I have a question, which is, it seems like, could we deal with this in a way that's less severe than surrendering the certification?
Well, he indicated to me, he's discharged today, as a matter of fact. He going to be discharged. He indicated to me that he would like to take some time to get his affairs in order, and then he would plan on coming back to reapply.
Okay.
That's what he expressed to me.
Okay, so he understands what he's doing by surrendering his license, because it seems like a suspension or something else.
Correct, yes, he understands that. He was in consultation with his fiance, and they came to that decision that he needs to get his affairs in order and then come back to the board at a later date to reapply.
Mr. Chair, I believe he's real close to being canceled anyway. He's been...
It's been almost a year since... Okay. Thank you. Well, if there's no more discussion, we'll vote on the motion to accept the consent agreement. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. We'll move on to 6C, complaints requiring board guidance. 6C1, it's case number P18-010. This is for Robert Witten, non-registrant, who has a... the complaint is that he advertised to be an architect on the internet without registration with the board. He's registered, I believe, in another state, Florida, but not in Arizona. Board looked at the website and it contained the term architecture. But I think the registrant's claim at this point is that he's only designed two single-family homes and that does not require registration in Arizona. So I guess it's up to us to discuss whether he's been practicing architecture or not. Or practicing or advertising to practice.
Well, I think he's retired now, and again, to do residences in Arizona, you don't need to be licensed. I think this is a frivolous case. I don't agree with it, and I'd move that it be dismissed. That's my position.
He also noted that those two homes belong to him.
And that too.
So that's...
The only thing, I think I agree with you guys. I did see an article in the Arizona Republic about those homes, and it goes, at other times the triangle light shines through, says Robert Witten, an architect who is noted for his one-of-a-kind furniture and sculpture. His company is Robert Witten Design Studio. The home which he designed was built in an infill lot, and that, so it goes on. So,
and I think that's a perfect example of media writing what they want to write, assuming something they haven't checked the facts on. So that's what I think.
I'll second the motion.
I understand the motion. Just a little more discussion, I guess. We've had folks in the past who have been designers on residential homes, but have used architecture in their names, and we've had an issue with that. So do we have an issue with, I think, his website talking about architecture? I'm not as concerned with the practice as I'm just questioning more the advertising.
I personally don't in this particular case, a specific case, because of how this case got before us in the first place.
Okay.
If you saw who filed it, it always causes me to pause.
Understood on that.
I'm not... He doesn't claim to be an architect on his website. He's just used the word architecture, and the name of his company is not architecture or anything else like that, so I'm not that worried about it. I was concerned just seeing the article in the Republic. But, yeah, that's it. We have a motion, and yes, we have a second.
Motion to dismiss.
To dismiss item 6C1. Ms. Soto, is there anything you want to add?
Just that There's no address that indicates that he's even in here, in Arizona. So that was really why I kind of asked for guidance, just because when you look at his website, you can try to look for an address. There's no address that indicates Arizona. Because he was in an article that was written here and it is in Arizona, if you type in Arizona, he'll come up. But everything's just design build. He's 81, he's retired, and he's just building homes out here for himself. So.
Okay.
So I can support guidance on this one, because I do know he used the term architecture, but historically he was an architect in Florida, and there's really no way to say that he's here besides
Okay. Okay, so we have a motion to dismiss case, or item 6C1. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Are we ready for the hearing? Or?
We still have 4 minutes.
Okay. Can we then take discussion on item 5B? Or do we need the AG here for 5B? Which is the proposed consent agreement in lieu of hearing for Timothy Spangler. Is that also? Just in the sense that I think some of the other cases will take longer than.
Is that, just to point
out that Mr. Spangler's agenda is
9:30. Is what? Agenda is for 9:30.
So we still have about 4 minutes.
Okay. Any suggestions? We can do the consent agenda. Items 8.
Yeah.
8A, 1 and 2. This is review, consideration, and action on staff recommendations regarding licensing for cancellation of registrations that haven't expired one full year and review of registrations granted by the executive director.
I move that we cancel registrations and certifications that have been expired for a full renewal period.
That's it.
Thank you.
A1.
Yeah. A2 is for information really only.
Okay. I'll second that.
Second. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Just a note, Mr. Chair, I like the headings on these sheets to help clarify them. Mm-hmm. That's helpful. Very helpful.
Okay.
There's, yeah. A little bit of a heading on there that they
use. I agree. Okay. So.
We do A2 also?
Yeah.
That's already
it's
done.
Both of them.
Yeah, because that's just for review.
Okay.
I know this is really out of order, but what the heck. How about 9G?
G. Oh, G. Okay.
We got 2 minutes.
We have 2 minutes. Do you still want to have a holiday celebration after the December board meeting?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
Yes.
So what that means for some of the newer members, I guess we don't really have too many here today.
Certainly
but
here, yeah.
Neil,
were you subsidized?
No.
Patty and I have thought to consider Mediterranean food this time with salad, chicken, gyro meat, pita bread, that sort of thing. What
Sounds
do you
good.
Think? We're going to investigate some catering into that, and hopefully we can find a place that won't cost more than $50 a board member. But I will let you know.
I think that's reasonable.
Gyro meat.
Gyro, yes.
What is that?
Not tasted.
It's lamb and spices, and it's
rotate it on a rotisserie and they shave it?
Yes, I've seen that.
Okay. The chicken is a viable option as well. And salad.
It's Mediterranean food.
Yeah, Mediterranean food, something like that.
It's good for you.
Kicking it?
I always do.
Shocking.
Thank you. And what we usually do is the staff will get drinks and desserts. So we're hoping that the December board meeting agenda won't be very beefy, but I know enforcement's been busy, so what we do is try to keep that agenda slightly shorter and then have lunch at an appropriate time. Do you want to invite anyone? What we have traditionally done is invite members of the Home Inspector Committee, members of LNR, other people as requested by individual board members. So,
former members.
Yeah, we can do that sure. So, maybe Leroy will bring his lemon pies.
Definitely invite him.
So, I just wanted to ask and make sure you were okay with that, see if you had any questions or suggestions for anything else you might like to have at that December celebration.
Sounds good.
I think you got it covered.
Cool. And I think our board meeting's on a date Hanukkah takes place, so it will be great.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
So we don't have a board meeting in November.
We don't, because...
So after then, the December agenda may be...
Yeah, it might. But because of the holidays in December, it'll be like the 12th of December.
12th of December.
So it's early right now.
Understood. Okay, good.
Okay. Thank you.
December 12th,
Okay, so we're ready? Yep. Thank you, everybody.
I might send green slate to my place.
What?
Okay. We're going to deal with case 5A.
No, I want you.
This is the date, time, and place. For the matter dealing with Steve Maslin, case number P17072, scheduled to be heard by the Arizona Board of Technical Registration. Will the parties please identify themselves?
Certainly. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Scott Donald, the Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Board of Technical Registration.
Thank you. And Mr. Maslin is not here?
Correct. Thank
you. The state filed a motion for the board to deem the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing admitted. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as true and move directly to a determination of what discipline is appropriate in light of the violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its request, and then the respondent can address the board. Please address your remarks to the issue of whether you received the complaint and notice of hearing. Okay, that's irrelevant since it's not here. So if the state can make the presentation, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. In this case, the complaint notice of hearing was filed and was served on the registrant. He is considered to be served when the mailing takes place to his address of record with the board, and that was accomplished through both regular and certified mail on September 19th. To date, we have not heard anything from the registrant, and so I would request at this time that the board approve the findings of fact of the complaint as allowed under statute, and then provide an award to the board of costs and fees incurred in this action, as well as the application of the registration.
Okay. Thank you. At this time, the board will deliberate and rule on the state motion. We can begin with general discussion or move to motions. The first motion will be to determine whether to grant the state motion to deem the allegations as admitted.
I so move.
Okay. So you move that we grant the state's motion and deem the allegations to complaint and notice of hearing as admitted.
Yes.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? I have one question for the state real quick. it looks from the packet that the letters were mailed on September 19th. The one at the address of record was received on September 25th. I just want to make sure that's still in compliance with the statute. When is service known to have taken place? When we send it or when it arrives?
Mr. Chair, service is deemed as of the mailing.
Okay. So 30 days from September 19th?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Then we're going to vote on the motion. All in favor of the
aye.
Motion?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you. The board has deemed the allegations in the complaint notice of hearing as admitted. Is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusions of law?
So moved.
Okay. Do we have any discussion on the item?
I'll second that, though.
You second. Thank you.
I have a question. I thought I saw some disconnect between the civil penalty at different points in the attachment. The civil penalty in the order that is signed by Mr. Spangler is $750.
You went down too far.
We're going to have separate motions. One, to make sure that the conclusions of the board are correct, to adopt those conclusions, and then we'll have another one adopting discipline as appropriate.
Just a second, please. Mm-hmm. Spangler. And that's an answer. Okay. Okay. I was confused with the orders. I'm clear. Thank you.
No problem. Okay. So do we have any discussion on the conclusions of law? Findings of fact, conclusions of law. If not, we'll have a vote. All in favor on adopting the findings of fact and conclusions of law?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Then the final issue for determination is the appropriate discipline based on the findings of fact, the conclusions of the law we have adopted. We will allow the parties to briefly address the issue. So if the state wants to address the board.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I believe first off that an award of costs and fees is appropriate in this case, as this is a situation where Mr. Maslin had previously been in a consent agreement which he failed to abide by, thereby requiring this current action. I believe revocation is the appropriate result of this, because Mr. Maslin has proved that he will be regulated by failing to abide with this earlier consent agreement. I do believe, however, that in the event the board finds this does not rise to the level of revocation, then certainly an administrative penalty in conjunction with at the very least a suspension would be appropriate. But I would certainly request of the board that revocation be the appropriate sanction in this case, as well as potentially an award of administrative penalty and certainly an award of costs and fees incurred in bringing this to the board. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And the registrant is under probation right now with the board until April of next year?
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact date, but it is currently on probation.
Okay. So I'll open it up for discussion first before we go to motions. Anybody has any suggestions on how to deal with this case? This was a case where we entered into consent agreement. He promised to provide peer reviewers, pay the fees, and do some other things, and has not completed those items. And this is a 2015 consent, so it's been a couple of years.
Yes, the effective date of the order was April 29th of 2015.
Let's take a turn.
I'd favor revocation. I'm not sure how we deal with any fees and penalties. I mean, it would probably be the same cost of investigation and was recognized in the original consent. At least that's what comes to mind to me. I don't know if anybody has any other thought about that.
In terms of fees?
Yeah.
Yeah, are there any fees that have accrued for additional staff time? Is that what we're talking about?
I don't know what they would be, Chair, but I could certainly request the information of staff.
But I think
yeah, we're not looking for a specific number, just the fees that we would be assessing is for staff time and bringing this case to a hearing.
It would be for this current.
Okay.
And just to be clear, attorney's fees?
Yes.
As well?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Staff time and attorney's fees. Good. Okay. Everybody feel revocation is appropriate?
I do. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say suspension, please.
I mean, there's been no effort, even in the last, to try to justify the lack of effort or completion.
Okay.
That's my thought.
So with that, I'll make a motion to revoke the license and assess the cost of the staff time to get to this point and the attorney fees.
Okay.
Second. Okay.
So we have a motion to table for revocation and recovering fees spent by the board on this case. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. This concludes the proceeding. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you.
Okay, well, you guys are really soft-spoken, so take that.
Take the mic and speak up.
Okay.
Do you?
Yeah.
Something in the mouth.
Get out.
Get it.
Okay, we will move to item 5B on the agenda. This is P14-048, Timothy Spangler, non-registrant, in Arizona, ALTA specialist, register firm 18,700. And we have in front of us, I don't think there's a special procedure for this, right? This is just the regular agenda item. We have in front of us a consent agreement for Mr. Spangler's case that he's already signed. And I think the idea is whether we want to adopt this or proceed to hearing, which has already been scheduled.
I move that we do not accept the consent agreement and move to hearing.
Do we have a second? I'll second the motion for the purpose of discussion. So, Jason, if you could, would you explain?
The respondent is not a registrant. He's been apparently engaged in practice for quite some time. Just based on that, I think that's a very severe condition that we need to look at, and that's really the motivation for me advancing this.
So I think I agree with you. I'd like to get this case over our docket too. Probably the most expeditious way is to accept the consent. But I am concerned that he's been paying surveyors to stamp his work. He's been offering and practicing. He lied to the board on multiple applications, saying he didn't have any convictions or pending cases against him. And I do think that, yes, it's a consent agreement, but the penalty is too low as well. So I don't know. I could see a scenario where we offer a higher consent agreement, and if he takes it, we don't go to a hearing, but if not, we just proceed to hearing. Do you know when the hearing is scheduled?
I do not know the date off the top of my head. I believe it's towards the end of November.
End of November, okay. Anybody else had other thoughts on this? Okay. Jason, your motion is to reject the consent and to proceed to hearing, correct?
Correct.
Okay. If there's nothing else, then I'll just go to vote. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, guess we'll go to hearing. Thank you. Next we'll go to item 6C2 on the agenda, P17084, Andrew Kwasniak, Civil PE 52919 in Tatum Group LLC, non-registered firm.
Mr. Chair, I'm recusing myself.
Thank you.
From this and the next matter.
You get the file?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We have five members present.
We have five members present, so we have a quorum. Okay, this is in reference to the, Mr. Kwasniak, would you please state your name for the board?
Hi, my name is Andrew Kwasniak.
Okay, Kwasniak?
Yes.
Okay, this is in reference to Orduno versus City of Phoenix in a transportation engineering safety analysis. On April of this year, board received a complaint alleging that respondent might have failed to sign and seal a professional document. Respondent may have engaged in the practice of engineering through an unregistered firm in possible violation of ARS 32128, and respondent firm may have practiced a board regulated profession without firm registration. So there's details on the investigation. I'll let Mr. Wozniak, if you want to address the board, I'll let you do that first.
Thank you. That's a very short statement, so I'll just read the statement and follow some of the points.
Absolutely.
So again, let me introduce myself. My name is Andrew Kwasniak. I'm a forensic testifying expert. I have a PhD degree in civil engineering. I'm a professional registered engineer. I have professional traffic operation engineering, and I'm also certified accident reconstructionist. The subject complaint is related to expert witness report, where I was retained as an expert by the defendant attorney that represents City of Phoenix. The person who filed the complaint is Mr. Anthony Boyles, who was retained as a plaintiff expert in the same case on the other side. After I received the subject complaint, I was very surprised when I learned that according to Arizona board rules, I was required to seal and sign expert witness report. I want to emphasize that I don't have that many white hairs like some of my colleagues, but when I was a young engineer and I was supporting other testifying engineers, I asked my previous employers about this specific issue. So should expert witness seal and sign their expert witness reports? And the answer always was, it's on your own preference, on your own personal preference. Also, as soon as I received this complaint, before I wrote this specific expert witness report, the subject of this complaint, I had access to other expert witnesses' reports that were written by my peers. And I have a few examples here I just want to share with the board. I will pass by. Here is the expert witness report written by Dr. Blyle. Dr. Blyle is a traffic engineer. He does expert witness work. He's very well recognized in the state of Arizona. And here are some of the examples of the reports. There are as much engineering as you can imagine, which are not sealed and signed. I have another copy. Here's another expert witness report written by Mr. Peter Kuntz, which I had access to before I brought my expert witness report. And this report is also not signed and sealed by him. I have in excess of 50 different other examples of expert witnesses' reports that are not written and that are not sealed by professional engineers. Also, when I learned about this complaint, I was kind of surprised that it was even considered by the board for one specific reason. My report I wrote can be written by a person without professional engineering license and will be fully accepted by the court. There will be no issue with this report. Also, since I did my, since I received the complaint, I learned the following things. According to the state and federal law, there is no requirement to be a professional registered engineer to perform expert witness work. Also, I learned that NCES calls for uniformity when it comes to the rules that are approved by different boards in different states. According to my knowledge, there is no other state in the U.S. That has similar rules like in the state of Arizona. And most of my work, actually a lot of my work, is outside state of Arizona. For example, state of California. The state of California refers to the federal and state rules of evidence 702, which does not require the license to be expert witness. Also, since I received this complaint, I was able to learn that my opinion that I provided to the attorney can be disclosed in the legal matter as an expert disclosure statement. So the attorney can take my opinions, put in his format, and disclose it formally to the site, which in this case, I have no way to seal and sign. Finally, before I received the review of the assessors from the board, I asked other professional engineers in the state of Arizona to review my report and give me some feedback about the report. So one of the review I would like to share with you is right here. I just have one copy. So this review was written by Dr. Steve Werner. Dr. Steve Werner is, he has been testifying in pretty much every state in the U.S. He's by far a very well-recognized expert witness. He's a professional registered engineer as well. And he opined the following. Dr. Kwasniak's expert report presents statistical methodologies and analysis involving crash related to road characteristics. There is no aspect of his report that proposes a facility design or even design components. While the report is clearly one prepared by an expert in this field, it is submitted as a part of required expert disclosure of opinions in a litigation matter, and therefore does not appear to raise to the level of professional document in the context of professional engineering. Dr. Kwasniak's report is concerned with statistical analysis and could therefore also have been prepared by a properly trained statistician having no engineering license or degree. Since a comparable accepted report could be prepared by non-licensed expert, it is logical to conclude that a professional engineering seal is necessary for the report, especially since it contains no engineering design aspects. Dr. Kwasniak is a licensed professional engineer and has made no unfounded claims as to his qualifications. In litigation matters, disclosure of expert opinions is required of the various parties by the rule of the court. The manner of the disclosure varies by the court and also the desires of the attorneys. Some courts require reports, but in some cases, merely a bullet list of opinions is prepared by the attorney. The Arizona court do not require engineering license as a part of qualification to present expert opinions. Therefore, it is not reasonable to consider a document prepared to satisfy a court disclosure requirement as a professional document. Also, Dr. Werner stated that in over 30 years of working in the litigation support industry across almost all the states, I rarely see engineers including seals on the reports.
Mr. Kwasniak, if the other ones are similar, I think we get the idea of
right.
what they are.
Right. I just want to make one final statement. Okay. Regardless of whatever you believe, I'm correct in my decision not to seal this specific report. I want to assure you that I did not act with intent to violate Board's Rule Practice Act. At worst, I misunderstood the ATC rules to use the seal, and I simply follow my peers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kwasniak. So, yeah, I think this case merits some discussion. We did get two assessments from two of our EAC members.
Correct.
And is there anything, Thorne, you want to say about it? They thought it was a professional document.
Correct.
The report was a professional document.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else that is relevant?
Okay. No, that's pretty much as fine as summed it up.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that Mike actually is registered with the board. because in addition to the expert witness work, we have never submitted any document to government entities or private person that indicates we do any engineering work. Lately, we apply for a project, which we try to apply for most than 1.5 years. Finally, we most likely may not will get it, so therefore we register the board with our team with the board. So our team is registered as we relate the board.
It is as of today?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, being a non-attorney, I just want to clarify.
Speak into the microphone a little bit.
Being a non-attorney, I just want to clarify the definition of expert witness from fact witness in a litigation. Is it my understanding that only the judge that's adjudicating the case can declare or accept a witness as an expert witness?
That is correct. So the court decides if I'm qualified as an expert or not.
So the title that you're given, expert witness, as opposed to fact witness, is at the discretion of the judge and not at the discretion of Arizona professional engineering statute?
That is correct.
So,
speak up now.
Is that me? So, let's talk about this, because I want somebody to help me understand how is he practicing engineering? He's not designing anything. He's merely forming an opinion. Melissa, I don't get it.
That's why you're here, to discuss it.
Yeah, but so somebody help me understand.
The definition of engineering practice, that might help you in your discussion, because it defines professional services, creative work, consultation, research, investigation, evaluation, all of those actions conducted by a professional engineer are professional engineering practice in Arizona. So how do you distinguish, I guess that's the question, between what this respondent is doing with his education and experience from someone who isn't registered?
So we can't say the peers, whether in Arizona that don't seal their documents, or the peers around the United States that don't do it, that's not something we shouldn't consider.
I think we have a challenge, in my opinion. I think this, based on the definition of engineering practice, I think fits that definition, because it's any consulting work, any work that requires you applying engineering principles, whether it's design or not, is engineering practice. Now, we also have, and it's on our rules, very clearly says, a registrant shall sign, date, and seal a professional document in all cases, if the document is prepared for the purpose of dispute resolution, litigation, or arbitration, or mediation. So I think that's a very clear rule. The rule doesn't make sense to me. I think it's a bad rule. But I think it's the rule at this point, and maybe this is something that the board should pursue, a change in the rule, because I think, as the respondent stated, it's not traditional practice throughout.
Somebody tell me where he's applying engineering principles.
I have a question for the respondent. Would you have been called to do this if you were not a registrant?
I'm sorry?
Would the court have called on you, or the attorneys called on you, if you were not a registrant?
Oh, absolutely.
They would have?
Yeah, they would know my experience and knowledge in the field that I testify to. They will call me, I will write a report, and I will be admitted by the court to testify.
But I think a part of the qualifications that are considered for the expert witness is the PE license. And somebody asked, I mean, what engineering principles? There's discussion in this report about, you know, the travel way and, you know, crash analysis that's discussed in the highway safety manual and other engineering documents. I think it is. I just don't think it should be sealed, because the qualifications of the person are being assessed by the court itself. So I don't know that it needs to be sealed separately, but that's what the rule says.
And if I may, I want to have one more statement here. This is actually from California. There was a case in front of the court a long time ago about somebody didn't have a professional engineering license and do not seal professional, I mean, do not seal expert witness report. And the court found the following, among others. Second, the court found that testifying in court does not constitute the practice of a profession and is, therefore, beyond the scope of regulation governing practice.
Was that in Arizona?
This was actually the federal court instead of California.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I just make a couple of points? All of the documents that you've passed around that I've seen, I indicated in the signature name block that the individual identified themselves as PE. I'm just making that note. So each signature to a forensic report or a professional document had gone as far as to at least annotate it to show that they were a professional engineer, albeit without necessarily a seal, stamp, or a signature, or license number. But nevertheless, their professional qualifications in the use of advanced engineering principles had risen to the level of being a PE. And I think that's what I think is the substantive policy distinction. As an expert witness, again, if I understand the legality of that designation, is you can make an interpretation or a recommendation to the court, an extrapolation beyond the facts is what I'm getting at. A fact witness can only deal with what has been established as facts in a forensic case, but an expert witness can extrapolate beyond that and draw conclusions that require advanced engineering analysis and study. So it's that application of engineering principles. I could see a fact witness not being licensed because he's just merely parroting the facts of the case in testimony and documents, drawings, calculations, what have you, that are existent. But an expert witness is creating new documents, new studies, new reports, hypotheses, and providing them as testimony to the court. So that use of synthesis of advanced engineering principles, to me, represents professional practice. Now, whether or not a seal is required is another level of, for discussion. But I would certainly deem it necessary at a minimum to designate PE on the signature line.
Right. Personally, I have no problem with that. I'm very respectful of the PE license. I study hard, passed the exam, obviously, and I'm very proud of being a professional registered engineer. However, in addition to my PE, I have a PhD in civil engineering and all the other titles behind my name. And I always sign with PhD, PE, PTOE, and ACTAR, whatever I'm sending to anybody, in the email, in the form of documents, and so on. But I fully agree. I think that's something the board to consider. Should you be professional engineer licensed to practice expert witness work? And then part of the seal, again, as I pointed out multiple times, I can seal this document today, and if you decided to do that, I would be more than happy to do that, and nothing will change. Absolutely nothing will change.
Right, and I think there's also something interesting in this, which is our rules don't say that everybody who's an expert witness needs to be a civil engineer. What it says is that if you are a civil engineer and you're an expert witness, you should sign and seal the documents, which is, I mean, until recently I was under the impression that we had an exemption for that.
I know our assistant AG is available if you have any questions for him.
What question might we want to ask our assistant AG, Melissa?
Well, I would like to know whether the AG's office would feel comfortable advising the board that each case can be taken on its own merits before an administrative agency and weigh in on those issues.
Certainly each case is a unique case, and there factors that have to be considered with each specific case, and the board may find there are specific mitigating circumstances in one case that may excuse a behavior. It's going to depend on how the board has acted in the past, partially, for consistency purposes. I don't know that this has come up in the specific. Do you have any?
No, but we have three items today.
Warner says.
Yes, we have another case, but the respondent in that case has a different opinion. He normally signs his documents, but in this particular case, there were some extenuating circumstances, and he did go back and revise it.
I will say there's variability. I mean, I haven't done nearly as much expert witness as there was in the past, but I've done some, and I've seen a lot of variability in whether people stamp their documents or not on both ends. So I certainly don't think there's any ill intent on what he did. And given the changes in the practice, I definitely think there's extenuating circumstances. Given that his firm is registered now too, I would probably just lean towards issuing a letter of concern, just reminding Mr. Wozniak to seal documents prepared in litigation since you're a PE. I don't know. That's sort of where I would be. And then I would also think, Melissa and Patty, we might want to put on the newsletter or somehow remind people that this rule is out there and that it's come up recently at the board, so that if you are doing work in litigation, you should seal your documents if you're a PE. Or register architect, for that matter, because it applies to all the professions.
I agree. I guess I'm still struggling with the engineering principles that were applied. You know, the car crashed, there's a sign down there that says 45 miles an hour, blah, blah, blah. There's statisticians that do the work, they're not licensed. I guess I just unclear about that.
That's just me. The way I see it is, if he was not registered in Arizona, I don't know that if he wasn't engaged in engineering, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. But he is, so he's obligated to the Arizona rules as a registered. Regardless of what the courts say and do, I think he still has that obligation, and that obligation starts with him to look at the rules to know what his conduct is.
Okay. And I will say, because this will come up in another case, a lot of the expert witnesses don't get registered in all 50 states, but they're typically PE in one state.
And the court can recognize that, but mm-hmm. in Arizona, those are the rules
right.
that he's bound to, we're all bound to. That being said, as the respondent pointed out, it doesn't change anything in this case. All it is a formality. I really favor, and I'm going to move, that we just issue a letter of concern to this respondent.
I agree with that. And could you explain that to them?
We issue a letter of concern regarding the use of seals.
And how it affects his record.
Oh, I'm sorry. A letter of concern is...
I'm not familiar with that.
You are familiar?
Yeah,
okay. Okay. It's a non-disciplinary action. It's just a receipt that we had a conversation.
I understand.
Is that fair to say? Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Wozniak.
No, I understand. I appreciate it. I'm familiar with the rules right now, so I think that's very appropriate action to be taking right now. Sorry.
Thank you. And thank you for your time for coming here today. So if we can, what's that?
Do we vote on that?
Oh, sorry. All in favor of the motion?
I need a second.
Oh, yeah, we don't have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Third. Thank you for putting up with me. We have a motion and a second. We'll vote on the motion now. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you, Mr. Wozniak.
Thank you.
And Melissa again. I think if we can put this in a list of rules we want to look at.
Okay.
Next item is 6C3, case number P17085. Respondent is James Parks, PE, license number 10898. And this is in reference to another legal proceeding, Orozco versus Maricopa County, traffic crash engineering evaluation.
Mr. Chairman, I've also recused myself from this one.
Thank you, Mr. Everode. Got it. The facts of this case are very close, very similar to the other ones. The only difference is there's no firm registration issue here. And go ahead,
and the,
Mr. Warren.
The respondent in his response indicated that he normally does sign and seal, but due to a illness in the family at the time of the report, he simply forgot. But he did go back and revisited his report and signed and sealed it before it was submitted.
Based on that, whatever minor oversight he made, I move that we issue a letter of concern, the same as the previous case.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Then is there anybody in the office? Okay, we're gonna do. We're gonna move to case 7C, and this is Christopher DePrima, engineering application 172229. Background is on August 29th, the board voted to accept Mr. DePrima's signed consent agreement for the voluntary revocation of his license. On September 11th, Mr. DePrima reapplied to the board for registration as an engineer. Question for the board to answer is whether Mr. DePrima can safely practice with an engineering license in the state of Arizona. Mr. DePrima, would you please state your name for the record?
Christopher DePrima.
Thank you.
Should we call Mr. Everode to the table?
We should. Hey, we're waiting for you.
Mr. Public Member.
I wasn't sure if Mr. Sparks was here to talk.
No problem, sir. We're just starting case number or case 7C, Christopher DePrima, engineering application 172229. And this is about consent agreement signed in August for voluntary revocation of his license. And then in September, Mr. DePrima reapplied to the board for registration. So the application is complete, and we're here to hear from Mr. DePrima as to why he should get licensed.
Okay, I want to renew my license. Some of this is...
Renew, you mean you want to obtain a license?
Obtain a license, yeah. I like my job, I like what I do, I realize it's a privilege. I realize I got to obey all the rules and sanction any employee, anybody that doesn't obey the rules. I guess that's about it. I think I've said this before. Let's see. Did they have any questions to anything else? Or I think I've got all the experience and all the forms turned in. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, I'm good at structural. Let's see, how many years experience now? 16 years. And, it's been a good job. And I want to continue to do what I can do.
Okay. Is there any discussion or questions for Mr. DePrima?
Sir, have you engaged in any kind of remedial education or anything that would improve your practices since your voluntary revocation on August 29th, 2017?
Since then I can't do engineering, so I've just done some special inspections. I do mechanical drafting, and I worked with another engineer. I worked with him on a few projects. Let's see, but he's the engineer for my firm. So we discussed engineering projects. see. I thought about taking a class I wanted to take, but I haven't had a chance to do that. I do consult with my peers if I have any questions structural.
Mr. DePrima, I guess, and maybe this is where Mr. Foose is going, is that, you know, just 2 months ago, your license was revoked for issues dealing with aiding and abetting unregistered practice and some of the fairly serious ethical issues. So the question, I think, that we need, an answer we need to hear from you is, what has changed between 2 months ago and now that would convince the board that you should be registered and can safely practice?
Like I said, I agree to play by all the rules and sanction anybody that's trying to kind of lead me astray. I don't do any more civil work. I don't do any more work. I did my taxes correctly, and I don't have to worry about the employees anymore since I don't have any employees.
Yeah.
So, I think we'll say.
Ms. Pritzel?
Question. Mr. Lucan, your civil engineering license, that you're talking about structural, is your plan to practice as structural or
structural? Yeah, we do structural engineering. That's what I do.
He would need to take the structural exam.
Yeah.
But
the application is for civil.
Correct. And his education is in mechanical.
Professional engineers are allowed to do structural engineering. We can't do schools or whatever they don't allow for structural.
Okay.
Hearing nothing of any remedial education or anything to improve any conditions since the voluntary revocation, I move we deny the application.
Second.
Okay. Let's have some discussion. Mr. Noel?
A question I would have is, he's seeking registration in civil engineering. Should this be a structural engineering application? I mean, is it the right form or wrong form?
He just doesn't have the most of the engineers get a professional engineer license first, and they can do structural engineering. It's pretty common.
Well, yeah. I would suggest on that maybe deny this, but if he takes the exam in structure and passes it, then that's a different situation.
And maybe it is. In my mind, personally, this is more about moral character and repute than a technical issue. Mr. DePrima didn't really have a technical issue when we revoked his license.
I think the question the board should consider as well is whether this individual can be regulated by this board, or will he be difficult?
This time I do have a question for our assistant AG. Is there any, are there any intermediate solutions where we could grant but provide either, require or ask him to come into another, or modify the consent agreement to take some ethical classes and restrictions of practice if they're appropriate for structural or anything else? Or is this an approve or deny situation?
Well, right now, for the purposes of today's agenda, it's an approve or deny. There are other options available that have been agendized to analyze. In terms of whether the board could go back and modify consent, I would have to look at that, because it's not a matter of a suspension that we modified. It's an actual voluntary revocation. So the license itself is going to this point. In terms of going back and modifying to reinstate and alter the system, I honestly don't know what degree that would be possible. You could agendize that for a future meeting.
Okay.
Yes, I agree. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I think the onus is on the applicant. I think the, as Jason pointed out, what material fact do you want us to consider since the revocation of your license that has shown a substantive improvement in your overall professional practice? And giving me records of experiences and filling out a transcript is not what I would consider the discrete and substantive change in behavior going forward. So there has to be something else, as we mentioned, whether it be ethics training or whether it be, recommendations, aside from the form, maybe letters of recommendation that show an improvement in character and an improvement in professional practice performance. That would be my recommendation. So as was pointed out, our action today is to approve or deny on the application as formatted and submitted, and I too would recommend disapproval.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table and a second for denying the request for registration. So let's vote on it. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Mr. DePrimo, unfortunately, the request for registration has been denied at this time. I would advise you, if you have any questions, maybe contact staff and see what other avenues or what you can do to get to a different decision in the future.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir. Is there anybody else? I see a lot of people still in the public. Is there anybody else that hears for a specific agenda item? Because we could take that first. Okay. So this is item 9B. Okay, so we're going to address item 9B. Whether to adopt the proposed substantive policy statement regarding expert witness testimony. So would you please state your names for the record?
Yes, I'm Brock Heathcott, Assistant Attorney General.
And I'm Fred Zeter, Assistant Attorney General.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We also have present here Steve Ocean and Ted Howard from the Department of Transportation.
Excellent, thank you. Okay. So, the item today, if everybody has had a chance to read it, is to provide a substantive policy that would include acting as an expert witness as part of a professional service and engineering practice, basically. Is there anything Melissa or anybody at the board wants to say about the policy before we start discussion, substantive policy, or no?
I can tell you.
Don't want to put you on the spot.
Why it's here? I received a call from the AG's office inquiring about whether there was an exemption in our law for expert witnesses to come and provide expert testimony in civil court cases if they were not registered as PEs or any of our other professions in Arizona. We looked at the statute and there is no exemption. So the Attorney General's office kindly provided this potential substantive policy statement and asked that you discuss it and consider whether to adopt it or not. So here it is.
Okay. Would you gentlemen like to say anything about this policy?
I will say that first of all, I want to say that the Attorney General has no official position on whether you should or should not adopt this. But I will tell you that we have filed a motion with the court asking that an expert be disallowed because he's not registered in Arizona. And the court has not issued a ruling on that. And I presume that whatever this board decides would be very influential with the court, if not determinative, on the issue. Mr. Zeter is here to answer any questions you might have about litigation practice. And Mr. Goshen is here to answer any questions you might have about differences between Arizona standards and national standards, and why we think that it's important that an expert who testifies in Arizona courts be registered.
Okay. Thank you.
In traffic engineering cases, specifically?
Whether or not you're specific about that, I don't know. Those are the kind of cases that we're involved with at this point.
But, Mr. The actual policy that's proposed is that engineering practice includes acting as an expert witness. So it's not just traffic. It would be any engineering practice. And then obviously we would have to discuss why that would apply to engineering and not architecture or some of the other professions we regulate.
But this is for out-of-state people that come in that are not registered in Arizona, being an expert witness, and you're saying no.
By and large, most of the people who testify in cases we're involved with are registered in Arizona. On occasion, we have seen someone who is not registered in Arizona come in and offer expert witness opinions about Arizona design standards.
Can I ask a point of clarification? We're talking about state court cases, or are we talking about federal court cases?
Both. I presume it would apply to anybody who's registered in Arizona, anybody who's testifying in any court in Arizona. So it should apply to both federal and state
courts. It would apply to both federal and state courts.
I believe
courts.
It should.
If I could interject for just a moment, as counsel to the board in interpreting the statute, this has to do with the actual statutory interpretation of the practice of engineering. And so it's interpreting the board's statute. So it wouldn't be a matter of looking at it from the court standpoint, rather it's a matter from your standpoint as to what constitutes the practice and whether there's an exemption under our statutes for an expert witness testimony.
So interestingly enough, this is not exactly the same, but it's similar to the ones we just saw, where if someone is registered in Arizona, they need to stamp their documents. That presumes that that constitutes engineering practice. Otherwise, you wouldn't stamp your documents. But the statutes are silent on people from out of state. I am conflicted because I do see the value of being registered as you're preparing to be an expert witness. I do see two things that give me pause. I mean, one is, and maybe this one I can justify, is does this really protect the public? The person testifying is not doing anything that will be out there in the public. I do see the potential that, you know, if the state or any agency were to lose a $10 million verdict based on an expert witness from out of state that didn't have the right qualifications, that's not in the best interest of the people of Arizona. On the other hand, and I have seen this happen, is a lot of professionals are very hesitant to take expert witness position against a large public agency, even if they feel there's an issue, because it could compromise the livelihood. So I've seen cases where they end up having a poor professional in Arizona testifying, or they bring somebody from out of state. Those are their options. Someone who doesn't deal with the issue day-to-day because they're committed to the agencies, or someone from out of state. And I don't know. I'm not sure what position. Mr. Kramer, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I don't know if I'm in the right place or if I have any standing here. But
state your name for the record, please.
Douglas Kramer.
Who? Thank you, Mr. Kramer.
Does this have anything to do with accident reconstructionists? Will this affect them? Because there's a lot of accident reconstructions in the state that are experts, and they're deemed experts by the court, that accept their findings or their opinion of an accident and the reconstruction of that accident. They are not, though, engineers, but they do this. Many of them are retired police officers that have done that work. Some of them are. Okay. Okay, so does this, would this affect the Reconstructionists? And they're not here to defend themselves today.
There's one certified one in the back. I don't know. I guess the way I read this is that it says...
Can I answer that question?
Yes, absolutely.
I do litigation in this area for quite a few years. I don't think it would affect accident Reconstructionists unless they're engineers. In other words, if they're going to be an engineer, it's going to affect them. But I'm well aware there are many police officers who do this work and do it very well. And it would not affect them.
Mr. Noah?
I have a question. Would you define an expert witness and how you become one? Is it something like both sides agree that this person is an expert based on their resume and experience? Or how do you become an expert witness in a typical case?
You get hired by one side or the other.
But that doesn't make you an expert at that point. When do you become an expert?
You become an expert when the court says you're an expert.
Right. Is it the court? Do both sides have to agree to that?
No. But the court has the ultimate say. And the court will listen to what you say. The court, I'm not sure, will necessarily be bound by what you say, but they're going to take it very seriously because you gentlemen and ladies are the people who know engineering. And
does the court say you're an expert, or do they just take what they say into account? Do they make a statement saying that?
There will be a determination by the court whether the expert is qualified. So if they're challenged, the judge is going to look at their qualifications and say yes or no.
Okay.
Just to follow on, by adopting this substantive policy statement, are we handicapping the judge in making an expert witness declaration? He can do whatever he wishes and simply ignore this and declare a out-of-state engineer as an expert witness?
I am not aware of a case on this. However, my gut reaction is yes, the judge could probably make his or her own mind up. But I'm quite sure that the judge is going to look to the agency and the agency's definition for guidance. Well, so I'm not sure it would handicap the judge. I think it guides it.
I mention that because, let's say, after the fact, that individual, as expert witness, as one of our earlier cases, submits material, and he's not a registered engineer in the state of Arizona, is he liable for disciplinary action by the board?
No, because he's not a registered engineer.
Right, he's not a registered engineer in the state of Arizona.
Right. So.
If I can jump in for just a moment, this won't. This is only going to impact. A substantive policy statement is just going to take the existing definition and statute of engineering practice, because we have the existing definition of it. All this is saying is that this definition, any professional service or career work requiring engineering education, training experience, and the application of special knowledge, et cetera, acting as an expert witness does fall under that, which is sort of what you were saying earlier with regards to synthesis of ideas.
Yes.
And it's not going to prevent any judge from being able to tell somebody whether or not they're an expert witness. A judge will be able to still make that determination. This just determines whether that person is practicing engineering in the state of Arizona as defined under our statute. So it's going to require them to register, but it's not going to prevent a judge won't be able to say you're not an expert in the field.
No.
But we're saying that any expert witness in engineering fields in Arizona has to be registered, is basically what we're saying.
It's saying that they're engaging in the practice of engineering as defined by our statutes.
But which would subject them to discipline here.
Right? Subject them to discipline, Zeter,
because we sometimes discipline non-registrants for practicing here.
Oh, well, I wasn't aware of that.
Right? I mean, just to be clear, so if there's a California registrant that comes over, serves as an expert here, we find that he is practicing engineering in Arizona without a registration here, he'd be in front of this board like
several other folks are.
Certainly the board could, yes. I think it's unlikely we'll be going out looking for
that. Absolutely, right. We, other experts tend to do that
but
for
if
us.
You win.
Yeah.
So,
Mr. Hoost?
The extreme circumstance is going to be this, and maybe it'll never happen, but what if there's one expert in the state and he's part of this suit and the court needs to rely on an expert elsewhere, from elsewhere, because our expert is maybe the plaintiff or the defendant or something. Or maybe we don't have an expert in that field, or the experts are unwilling to testify in this state.
Well, I guess they would have to get an expert who's registered in Arizona.
What if they're all... have to register before they can...
Let's just say preoccupied.
So by way of comparison, the Arizona statutes require, in order to deliver testimony in a medical malpractice case, that an expert be... in the same field as the person that they're testifying against. And so that greatly limits the number of experts that are available in those kind of medical malpractice cases, particularly ones that have very restricted specialties. But the Arizona Supreme Court has upheld that statute and that restriction. So to answer your question, whether or not they would be able to find an expert in Arizona who's registered is probably much easier than it would be in those medical malpractice cases.
But the possibility exists, right?
There's some fairly specialized fields.
Yeah.
So the question is, we're shrinking the pool of expert witnesses. What's the reason for doing that? Do we have a good reason for shrinking that pool? And if this said that we would exempt PEs registered in other states because, I mean, as you talked about medical practice, they need to practice the same area and have the same knowledge, but that's just, and I don't know what the medical rules say, but you can have the same knowledge about the same issues and be registered in another state. So that would be easier for me to swallow than to say you have to be registered in Arizona.
So that's why we brought Mr. Bosch in here with us, so he can explain why Arizona is significantly different.
Thank you, Brock, for putting me on the spot. Chairman Angel and board members, thanks for taking the time to listen to me today. Why is Arizona different? I don't think we're any different than any other state. However, we get compared to other states, and that's where these gentlemen beside me or behind me try to help us. But when we have a PE from another state saying that I should do it the way that Texas does, we get hurt. So that's really why I'm here today. ASHTO is what we subscribe to. We follow MUTCD. We do have our own standards. I'm sure you guys have read about our crossover cases where we get hammered. Why are we not following another state standard? Well, because we have our own standards, and administratively, that should be enough. So that's why I'm here, and as Brock eloquently put, we'd like this. It'd be great if you supported our cause. Again, we'll keep on defending the cases, but it really would help to prevent the second guessing. It's another layer from out-of-state guys that don't know how we design freeways here in Arizona.
So you're specifically limiting this to highway design?
Well, that's a motivated request, I think.
That's a motivated. So I do have friends that are architects. I understand that this could cross over on the other side, too, and I bet you that I don't want to assume what they would like.
What about a mechanical engineer that works with some mechanical system that's, to me that seems like a different creature than a highway. And I agree with you. Administratively, this should all be handled, right? This is the way we do it in Arizona. It's spelled out. Done deal. Go back to Texas, right?
That's one example, Texas.
Go back to your home state or whatever. But I mean, what part of that isn't working? Why isn't that working? Do you have any insight on that?
So we try, when we go to juries, you know what the education level is of jury, right? 6 or 7. Great. So these guys do their best. We try our best with the expert witnesses, but they do hear what that other state does, and they just latch onto it. So that's part of the problem. We have you guys make sure that we're all registered here when we stamp plans. I did that for 20 years. I don't have to do it anymore. Thank God. Still a registrant. But that's pride. And to have you second-guessed by somebody from out of state that doesn't know the local standards, it just doesn't make practical sense. So I see how it would cross over into other industries, though.
Can you work for ADOT?
Yes, I do.
Yes, he's Deputy State Engineer.
So I want to be clear here, because we're talking about engineering practice. That's what's in front of us. So it's broad enough to encompass engineering practice, not just roadway design. We're also talking about interpreting this definition. I don't have a problem with this. There may be some, effects down the road that we might not like. In my practical experience, and you know, having done A&E work for the better part of 22 years, I can't tell you the last time I had a non-Arizona registrant in a case as an expert. I mean, it's probably been 15 years since some California guys were coming to Arizona, and they have all since gotten registered here. So as a practical matter, I don't even see that impact that we might be concerned about. Going to Mr. Jones' comments earlier that I heard about, you know, defining engineering practice, what if they're just looking at facts and they're not really applying engineering
principles?
Well, if that's the case, I'm not sure they're going to be deemed an expert. They're going to be deemed some person who's just coming in and saying, I think they drove too fast, or I think that wall's designed improperly because it looks bad, mm-hmm. as opposed to applying engineering principles. But if they are applying engineering principles, I think that would take this into expert work.
Yeah, I'd also like to carry on with what Andrew brought up. I don't think there's any question, at least, you know, it's been established in my mind that an expert witness using advanced engineering principles is performing professional engineering, as our statute is written. Now, professional engineering is very broad, and as you were trying to discern, it could be on a national scale. There are codes like ASME and IEEE and AISC that are national codes, have nothing uniquely particular about Arizona in their application. So you could have a professional engineer from any, you know, 50 states and territories qualified to meet that definition and use national codes. But I think what the concern here is that for specific Arizona cases that utilize Arizona codes, the preference would be a registrant in our state. Now,
we're not stating a preference with this policy.
But not yet, so we're kind of leapfrogging then from what we all, I hope, is consensus that expert witnesses are practicing professional engineering. Now we're kind of just leapfrogging it into, well, not only are you practicing professional engineering, you're practicing it in the state, as it applies to the state of Arizona. And that may well be in the litigation in front of the court, that the substantive issues are Arizona property or assets or whatever. They're not, you know, quote unquote, you know, out of state or national assets. They're usually you're not dealing with an EPA type case where there's environmental pollution or things of a global nature. You're really usually dealing with regulations that are local. So I'm just trying to wrap my mind around the downstream impacts of this substantive policy.
Yeah, if I had to say something, I think what I'm worried about is rushing into a decision on this that's going to have unintended consequences, whether it's in the accident reconstruction or whether it's on, again, shrinking the pool of experts or something else. And so I wonder if this, I mean, if we do this, which maybe we will, I'd like to understand what we're doing. And one thing I'd like to ask Ada, I mean, is this urgent? Because if not, I think this would be good for Legislation and Rules Committee to weigh in and see how they interpret the statute and how they would see a substantive policy being drafted.
Mr. Chairman, if I may interject just for a moment, just a couple of quick points. One is this is just a substantive policy statement and not a rules change or anything like that. It's not creating any new regulation or anything of that nature, and it's something that can be done, and 3 months from now, if you look up and see that, you know, there are some consequences, it can be undone at the next meeting. These are, it's a substantive policy statement just stating that it's simply interpreting the statute to put people, the public, on notice. And it's something that, to my second point, as Andrew and Eugene have actually confirmed, it seems generally accepted that acting as an expert seems to be understood by the committee to be, or by the board, to be the practice of engineering. It seems to be more an issue of how of policy issues that may come up related to that. If the board understands that acting as an expert is the practice of engineering, that's actually the entire substantive policy statement. That's all that that is. Beyond that, looking at consequences would certainly be something that could be looked at by the law committee for statutory change if it's determined that that's not what the board would like to have happen. But this is just purely interpreting and actually something that's been affirmed by the board that appears to be the practice of engineering. So if that is the case, that's really the kind of cool. But it's just merely to put people on notice that the practice of engineering, acting as an expert, is it doesn't really go beyond that.
Mr. Everwood?
Yeah, just one other comment, and I'm not anxious to jump on this, but keep in mind that when we're dealing with experts in these cases, we're dealing with experts because we're talking about almost always standard of care. Mm-hmm. And whether someone allegedly fell below the standard of care. And as you know, when you talk about standard of care, you're talking about, in this case, an engineer performing similar services under similar circumstances in a similar area. And so I don't have a problem with it for that reason as well. And I recognize that when you do something like this, you may necessarily shrink the expert pool, but that doesn't necessarily favor one side or the other. I mean, if you've got a limited number of clean room engineers, for example, doing mechanical work, that doesn't mean that they're pro plaintiff, pro defendant. You've just got fewer folks that have the experience in our locale with the type of environmental factors that we have here. So
I understand, and you know, we can wrap up the discussion in a few minutes. I will say a specific personal experience I had is I had someone approach me to be an expert witness on the South Mountain Freeway on the plaintiff side against ADOT. And my immediate response was, I don't even want to know what your case is. I can't do it. So, and I bet you a lot more people said that. And so I don't know who they ended up as their expert witness. Maybe they found somebody good. Maybe they didn't. But you know, most of the highway engineers that know the ADOT standards in Arizona work for ADOT or with ADOT a considerable amount of the time. So they might be hesitant to take on a case against ADOT. And so what's left is maybe the people from out of state. And the issue is standard of care. And I know how complicated it is to get a jury to understand what the standard of care is, and dismissing the Texas and making them understand that what we use is ASHTO and MUTCD. But it seems like the issue lies there is establishing the standard of care more than the other stuff. Now, I'm not opposed to the policy, but I'm very hesitant to just go today and say, yep, this will be fine.
Yeah, I need to check something right here. Our experience is that a great many of the experts that testify in these cases are from out of state. They're registered in Arizona, but they are from out of state. But it's not a matter of limiting the pool to just people who work here in Arizona.
I think it's important to recognize, too, that there is a focus on something that truly is local in nature. Highways are local. We don't build roads in Arizona the same way that we do in New York or Ohio or whatever. They might look the same in a template, but the materials are all different, and there are different standards. I'm getting attached to the local standard of care here, really, and providing or focusing on that, where maybe we don't need a worldwide pool of
expert witnesses in this case. We need a more narrow pool, or it benefits the court to have a more specific pool, I should say. For example, in Mojave County, I mean, the roads are different there than they are here in Maricopa, or maybe in the southeast or the southwest. So it's the local standards of care are very important in this this discipline of engineering. I think earlier I was looking really broad-based at, you know, some of the mechanical systems or things that, as Gene pointed out, would be somewhat universal. So,
well, this policy is for all engineering practice, though.
That was the first hook for me, but I think I see the importance of recognizing a pool that is truly specialized or localized, I should say.
Yeah, I think it's beneficial. I think it raises the bar for Arizona. I think it's an enhancement. It definitely provides, you know, greater level of care for the court cases in Arizona that would recommend a licensed engineer in our state to perform the expert witness function. I think it's an enhancement. I mean, again, we'd have to see what the downstream effects are and what the consequences are, but, you know, as was pointed out.
And drawing on what Andrew said, the witness is somewhat neutral. Did I understand you correct? They're kind of neutral in the case.
Should be
neutral in the case.
Well, but I mean, let's be honest. Most of them.
They're being paid by one side or the other.
So I don't know if that impacts what you're thinking, but
maybe a little bit. But I mean, their role is just to provide evidence.
Their role is to provide recognized, you know, testimony based on recognized methods and evaluation. So they're subject to attack if they're not doing that.
I guess they serve both parties in the case, though, right?
No.
No, they serve a specific party.
Each side has an expert.
Okay, so that could
be... And as a practical matter, just so you, I mean, both sides designate their experts. And as Mr. Zeter commented, unless one side objects or tries to question the qualifications, those folks are going to be put on the stand as experts. So there doesn't have to be a pre-qualification.
So having a registrant from out of state that might have a different level of experience, if they're representing somebody other than, let's say, our public agency, ADOT, that could be harmful to our public.
If they're trying to impose their own state's regulations.
Okay. And then there's the issue that, it is my understanding, and if somebody knows better, let me know, but most states don't require that people be registered in that state for litigation. So is there a reason that's the case, or is it just because that's the way it's always been?
My understanding is that judges have historically said that issue goes to the weight of their testimony and not the admissibility, historically. But again, and I saw Mr. Zeter nodding, it's been a long time since we've had experts, even if they're out of state, that haven't been registered here. And I recognize there may be an inclination to not oppose or go against ADOT, but in all the cases you all have had, I'm sure you have your fair number of adverse experts.
Yes, and the vast majority of them are registered in Arizona. There are just a few examples.
Okay. So, Chairman Angel, this just raises the bar. If the book of business of that firm or person wants to do business here in Arizona, I mean, our registration fees are pretty cheap here.
Yeah,
okay. So that would be part of their business plan to be a registrant. So to me, it just raises the bar a little bit. We could still have the same challenge. I'm also going to encourage you, please testify against ADA, because we're all bound by the code of ethics as engineers, and there is nothing wrong with that, and we should be willing to do that. So, Chairman, I hate calling you out like that.
Nice try.
Ouch. Only if there's a reason.
Dr. Angel, in our sealing rules, it acknowledges that documents prepared for court. So it seems like there is an expectation already for this. So I'm inclined to support this at this point.
Are you making a motion?
I guess if I'm, yeah, I should. I move that we support or we adopt this substantive policy statement.
Second.
We have a second. Okay. Any more discussion?
This seems like a pretty big move to make a decision in a 20-minute period or whatever it was. I don't know if we would change our thoughts. I mean, what you said makes a lot of sense to me and what everybody's saying here, but it just seems like it's an awfully big step.
But I just want to make the note that it's been pointed out it is reversible. I mean, it's not an irreversible statement or we're not making law or regulation. We're simply providing an interpretive policy position, which could be at either clarified or withdrawn at a later date.
My concern is the same as Mr. Nellis. We have not asked for stakeholder input. We have not found what practices are. We haven't done any of those things, and we're ready to approve it. I guess I would almost be willing to, whatever we all vote is fine, but I would vote for it if I felt comfortable that we are going to refer this for immediate review. I mean, I don't mind implementing a policy, but immediately get stakeholder input to make sure we're in the right and look at it at LNR, as opposed to just setting it in stone and forgetting it.
Well, I'd like to ask for clarification, too. I think you understand that we're going to create a policy here. My understanding is we're just clarifying what's existing.
We're interpreting the statutes and the rules, because there's nothing specific that spells things one way or the other. So we're interpreting. The board is interpreting those statutes.
That's right. I don't think that's the creation of a policy. And I look at it as more... I don't want to use the word tentative, but it certainly isn't cast in concrete either. At this day and time, this is what this board believes these rules say.
It is called a board policy, but whatever it is, I get the point. That's how we're going to treat anybody who comes before the board now. If they're an expert witness and they're not registered, we're going to say our interpretation is you should be, so you've been practicing unlicensed. So that's the only reason I want to say, for me to support it, I want to know that we are going to take this out to LNR and get some stakeholder input on whether this makes sense. So that if it does make sense, then we're good to go. If it doesn't make sense, 3 months from now, we want to change it, we'll change it. It's the only thing I'm asking.
Would that fall under a rule change, Patty?
No.
This is no? Okay.
So if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a motion.
There's a motion and a second from Trevor Road.
What's that? Anything else? I'm just thinking, how would this have played out with the previous case we just heard, where we just gave a...
Well, we had, well...
No, you go.
No,
you're accusing yourself. You can't say anything.
You can't answer.
I don't see any difference because he was a registrant, and his issue was a signature thing.
Right.
It was more of a technical issue.
Both were registered in Arizona. Yeah.
We would be consistent in the sense that we're saying that's professional practice, and therefore you should be registered in Arizona. So it's consistent. I just worry about unintended consequences of this.
I think if it's that faulty, if there's some unforeseen that we can't pick up at this meeting, it'll be brought to our attention promptly.
I'm not sure, Jason. In the sense that, we might not see anybody come before us who's being an expert witness without a license. They might just decline to take on cases.
Well, that's a good point.
That's the only reason I want to say, let's approve it. I'm fine with that. But I'd like to get input. Let's reach out to a few attorneys and see how often do they see this. Do they see their practice being affected by this and how? And then, make... We would have a policy that's standing, and if it looks good, then we'll continue it. If it doesn't, we'll revisit it. And it's just a policy.
Yeah, that's
I like that.
Very fair.
Ready for a vote?
Yes, please. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
last time we disagreed, you got the I told you so later, so.
I'm a little worried. Remember?
Yeah, now I do. Is there anybody else from the public? I don't think so. Does anybody need a break, or are we good to continue? Five-minute break?
Welfare break.
It's 10:58. We'll reconvene at 11:05. Stuff for today. We're moving on to item 6D1, case number M12-033, Mohammed Mapar, PE Civil 31926. On October 2012, board signed into effect the consent agreement that required peer review as one of the items without a deadline. The peer reviewers were approved by the board, but since then there's been no projects involving retaining walls, according to the respondent. Is that correct?
That's accurate.
Anything else we need to know about this case? And what do you guys want from the board?
We just want to bring it before you because it's just hanging out there. These guys are being held underneath something with no time frame. They can let it extend to whenever. Happy reviews. You want to put a date on it? You want to revisit that?
Did they pay the penalty?
He paid the penalty.
But it's not that he's avoiding peer review. He just hasn't had any projects that would be peer reviewed. Is that?
That would be
That's what he's reported to the board.
Correct. Whether he's avoiding peer review or not, by not having projects, I can't say.
So I have a question on this one. Is there any way to change that consent agreement and remove the peer review requirement and instead replace it with a structural practice restriction? Unless or until he gets peer reviews on... Unless
he'd have
peer
to agree.
Project. Yeah, he'd have to agree, but... Understood.
Yeah, it could be modified by both the parties, but we would have to have him go down and turn it
to he lives in California.
But what we would move to offer him a revised consent agreement?
Certainly you could do that.
With the restriction of practice on structural engineering? And, you know, if he says no, then I guess we'll be back. Yeah, but that way, I think the incentive for him is he doesn't have to keep reporting stuff to the board or keep dealing with us either, asking him questions every 3 months. So I would make a motion that we offer a revised consent agreement, removing the requirement for peer reviews in exchange for a restriction in structural practice. And that's it.
Problem.
Yes, can we have a timeline on that?
Until indefinite, unless he provides peer review, or he provides projects that he will do with peer reviewers. Is that something we can say?
We got to be more specific. Three projects? I mean, you want to keep that in? As the
For three projects. So it would be an indefinite restriction of practice. But then the problem is, how can he take projects and get peer review? I mean, we could take it a restriction in practice unless he completes a 60-hour course or 30 or whatever, or take the structural engineering exam and passes it. Any of those conditions could remove the restriction of practice.
Could we ask him what he's doing or what's happening from his end?
We might know. Do we know what he's doing? You said he's in California?
He's not having projects, according to him, that... include retaining walls. I think that's the caveat here is that the previous board at that time included that language.
Very specific retaining walls, yeah.
Can I rework that motion?
Let it ride.
You may, yes. In fact, I withdraw my motion so you can make the right motion.
I would move that we offer a consent agreement with a restriction of practice to structural and send it to the person. Just send it to him.
With no time frame?
That'll close the case, right?
If they sign it.
If they agree to it, that'll close the case. It's a restriction of practice.
Indefinite?
Indefinite, yeah.
But don't we want to give him an out? I mean, say if he takes the structural engineering exam and passes it, we remove it.
Well, he's got an out. He can respond to us and say, well, wait a minute, what's going to happen?
Harlan has pointed out in the past, you said unless he passes the structural exam. So that would be something.
That would be something in lieu of.
So we have a restriction. So the motion would be we revise the consent agreement to restrict the practice of structural.
Until
becomes registered as a structural engineer.
Right.
He passes the 16-hour exam.
Passes the 16-hour structural exam.
And in exchange, we would remove the peer review requirement because it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah. Anyway. And in the meantime, he can practice civil engineering with all aspects other than structural.
Okay. So we have a motion,
like
I think.
Structure.
I'll second that, yeah.
Second, okay. Any more discussion?
So he just can't practice structure on the civil engineering end of things?
He's a civil engineer, but he can't do structures, whether it's bridges or retaining walls or buildings, unless he passes the exam.
Okay. So I'll read. It's in the record, but I'll just read it. I move that, just to clarify, that we offer revised consent agreement with an indefinite restriction of structural practice until he passes the structural exam and removes peer review, and we remove peer review language from the original consent agreement.
Second. Okay. How about discussion? Let's vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Motion passes. So hopefully he'll respond. Has he been responsive so far?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Next item is 6D2. Case numbers M08037 and M08086. Respondent is Tony Enriquez, RA. And this is a case, well, I'll let you summarize the complaint.
Yeah, it's very similar to the previous case, is that the three peer reviews were without a time frame, and he's not even necessarily practicing, just keeping his registration up. He's somewhat retired. He had stated that he wanted to keep his registration because he earned it.
So it's been 8 years. We could do something similar, the indefinite suspension like the other case. Except that he doesn't have an alternate source. So I wonder if we could restrict it other than three peer-reviewed architectural projects. At which point the restriction.
Or if it's a matter of title, don't we have an active or retired status? I mean, if he's in retired status.
What's but that? You have to be in good standing to go inactive.
And he's not?
He's currently still on probation because of the peer review.
But couldn't we revise the agreement to say that he would be in good standing if he changed to retired status? No? I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but... Because retired, he wouldn't be able to practice, right? He would have the title, but would not be able to practice. Is that correct?
Yeah. But there is a law that restricts inactive if you're not in good standing, if you're on probation. The purpose of that is so essentially somebody can't let their license go and then come back and, you know, the whole thing has disappeared and they start all over again.
Okay. So, and if somebody goes on retired status, can they go back to active? By doing what? Just by calling the board and paying?
It depends on how long it's been. If they're inactive more than 5 years, they have to retake the exam. If they do it within 5 years, they just pay the renewal fees.
See, this would be a problem in geology. You'd be a geologist in training. Or a trained geologist.
Forever.
Yeah.
But that route won't address our concern, whatever it was, that prompted the peer review requirement, right?
Right. Well, the issue was he must have had some sort of technical skill issues, so we ordered peer review. But if he became retired or inactive, he couldn't practice.
Yeah, but if we redid a consent agreement to take out peer review and essentially say you've complied with the requirements of the consent agreement, so you can now retire in good standing, and then however longer later, he turns around and says, I want to go active, he's kind of skirted the issue.
Right. Unless we modify the consent agreement to say, you know, we'll waive the three peer review requirements as long as you agree to move to retire status for at least 12 months or whatever.
It was, if I could just interject here, Mr. Chairman, if you look at the consent agreement that was signed, the cases before you had to do with them signing plans. It was not technical in nature. Mm. It was just submitting plans or starting a project without a proper permit application. It was that he didn't sign it. In the one case, M08-086, that he failed to sign and date and seal plans with his architectural number or mark the preliminary draft. It wasn't, these cases weren't technical in nature.
Well, then some peer review seems overkill.
Yeah, letter up.
Yeah,
okay. So I don't know what was going on in 08.
I have a pen.
I don't know who was on the board back then, but not me.
2009.
Before
2010.
Oh, it was before the two of them.
Yeah.
Well, what do you guys think? I mean, I'm almost inclined, if it was an issue of just failing to seal plans and things, it doesn't seem like peer review would fix that. So I don't know why we would have that requirement.
So we just let it ride?
Would they vote to terminate the probation and close the case?
I don't think they could do that just because it hasn't met the terms of the consent. They could offer a modified consent.
Except thanks for your donation. He's already issued a letter of recommend and hasn't paid the So could they simply vote to strike the three peer reviews given their new information and their discussion today?
I'll be hesitant on that because I would set boards up for future boards to go back and just determine any consent agreement and just strike that
Dr. Angel Gear goes back.
If you look at all the findings of that, it is a little bit more than just signing and suing somebody else's plans. He wasn't following code. His client was using plans that weren't after preliminary drafts, so they were used for construction. I think there's the peer reviews are there. So there's something more. Maybe you could do something similar to restrict until the architect is there.
You know, he's always going to say he's an architect, right? This maybe force his hand and he just make him retire. Then it doesn't matter. He wants to keep his architectural name. That's kind of the holdup. Somehow let that ride or push him so he'll come to senses and just retire.
He says he's retired.
That's why I think maybe we just say that, you know, we amend the consent, remove the peer review, and force him to retire for 12 months. But what leverage do we have in this case? He's not even practicing.
And I don't know that he has any consent.
If he doesn't sign that type of revised agreement, he could then move to revoke his license.
And could we make that case, failure to comply, given that we have no timeline on the...
Kind of lame.
Yeah.
The guy's retired, and we're going to force him to work to meet the...
Yeah, I'm not as worried about the leverage, I guess, given the time. If we do a revised consent agreement to remove the peer review requirement, but with him also maybe agreeing to retirement status. I don't even know that I care too much about a minimum time on that.
It's been 8 years.
It's been in 8 years.
Yeah, and whether we say 6 months or 12 months or we don't say anything on the timing of retirement, if he wants to change his mind, he can change his mind later.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Just say, you know, let's revise this consent agreement and we'll remove the peer review requirements if you agree to move to retired status.
I'm not sure he can agree in this document to move to retired status because of his current status. He's currently on a disciplinary status from which he can't move directly to retirement. So it would actually have to be a release from this and then good standing. And then he could enter retirement for good standing, but he could also be released from this back to good standing and then decide not to retire. So I'm not sure we could do it in one document, and if we do it in two documents,
then we really have no leverage.
We would be letting ourselves.
So that sounded like you're saying he can't retire because he's not in good standing.
Not his present status. because of where we are right now.
Wow.
He can't move to that status.
That's a tough one.
I mean, I don't see a problem with just removing the requirement for peer review.
At this point, yeah.
Now, I understand if we need to modify the consent so the board doesn't, you know, second guess another board, I'm okay with that. But we should then offer a revised consent without the peer review.
And then, since he's complied, we close the non-compliance case.
Say, how about you retire?
What you're looking at.
And that has to be done by a revised consent agreement? Okay. All right, I'll move that we offer a revised consent agreement that removes the peer review language of the original consent agreement and closes the matter.
We have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any more discussion?
Yeah.
Mr. Jones, you're thinking.
Can have that.
No?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. I don't have any more stuff.
We're done.
I mean,
we're not policy done. Matters.
Yeah, we got a lot of policy matters today.
They're quick.
Sure.
Did you guys consent 6A and B?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, we did.
6A and B?
Mm-hmm. We dismissed A and we agreed to sign B1 and B2.
Yeah, we went through that.
Okay.
So, agenda item 9A, whether contractors who claim tax credits are practicing engineering. And I'll give a little bit of background because I sent this to Melissa at the request of the IRS. ominous words. This really is just to have a discussion, I think, today, unless we feel like it's completely clear. But the IRS has a research and development tax credit, and from my understanding, you generally can get some tax breaks as a company if you do research and development, which most of the time is interpreted as being engineering level work that requires making decisions and, you know, evaluating alternatives and things like that. What the IRS has asked, because they have a PE who assesses whether people's claims of research and development are, you know, valid or not when they assess the tax credit. He said the issue they're having is there's a lot of contractors that are coming in and saying that they are doing research and development.
General contractors.
General contractors. Yes. And they've asked the contractors if they have an engineer on staff, and they've said, no, we don't have an engineer on staff, but we can design because we're part of the design team.
Okay.
So here's some of the things, and here's some of the things that have brought up. There's a list in your thing, but one of them said proper concrete formulation installation as well as proper design of support beams And they actually had a steel beam that was specified by the engineer and replaced it for a concrete beam. Then another one, it's...
But the contractor's hiring an outside, it's not within the company, they hire an engineer to design that, to do the formwork, they stamp it, seal it, submit it as a job drawing. It's not, but they don't work for their company.
Right. In another case, so taxpayer, the contractor's claiming that they added a reinforcing beam, that they researched and evaluated methods for constructing corner offices without support columns. Specifically, they did an on-site analysis and calculated appropriate tolerances to meet project requirements without sacrificing structural integrity. They claim to have designed, detailed, fabricated, erected, supported, and stripped formwork for all cast-in-place concrete elements. There's people who claim to have done a mechanically stabilized earth retaining wall, which is actually something that's very specialized to replace a masonry wall. So I think...
Well, this is something I know quite a bit about.
Yes.
Believe it or not. So I think the general contractor cannot claim the tax credit. I think the engineering company can, the architectural company. I do it, but not the general contractor. They don't have the licensees on staff. They are a subconsultant to them doing the work. So that subconsultant can claim the tax credit if they want to go through the process, but the general contractor cannot. No.
So if the general contractor was working for you, they wouldn't be?
They're not working for
you. If they're working for...
No, they don't work
for anybody.
So the question for us is not whether they can claim the tax credit or not. The question for us, I think, is whether they're practicing engineering. If they truly did what they say they did.
Well, yeah.
Because this could be several different... One way it could be is that, yes, they had an engineer or architect on the project, and they said, hey, we have this idea to redesign this office. Does this work? And then the engineer or the architect went, looked at it, calculated, and said, yep, this works. Here's the revised plan. Go build it.
Yeah, and that architect or engineer goes...
Right. So that's one thing that could have happened. In that case, they probably wouldn't have a practice in engineering, but they probably wouldn't get the tax credit either. The other case is that they actually did all the work and designed it and changed it. So the question for us is, would that constitute practice of engineering?
Well, I have a question.
Wait a second. So the specifications say on formwork and concrete and all that, you have to have a licensed engineer to do this work. No matter what section of the spec we're talking about, you have to have a registrant do that work. So do they have it on staff, general contractor? Maybe that's different if they had it on, but I do not know of any registrants at work for contractors actually take on that liability and risk to design that sort of stuff. They always go outside.
So they specifically say, go ahead, Melissa.
My question is, why can't the IRS determine whether to grant them the tax credit or not? Why do we have to?
Yeah.
The same reason ADA needs clarifications on the expert witness.
Good point.
They denied the credit, I think, in this case, and the taxpayer came in and said that they don't employ any licensed engineers, I'm reading from our packet, but the statute defines the design team as a group of individuals that includes one or more professional registrants collaborating with any other individuals on a specific project to develop professional documents. The plain wording of the statute could not be clearer, see? An individual not licensed by the board is fully able to engage in the development of designs and projects, including designs to be included in professional documents. These facts are unambiguous.
Except doesn't it also say that, on the first page, the registrar of contractors' criteria omits designs, drawings, and plans and specifications submitted. So you're a contractor, but you don't have to design and draft plans and...
They're saying they can. I guess what the contractor is saying is that they can design plans because they're part of the design team.
If they have a registrant do the work.
They're saying there's a registrant in the design team. The engineer.
Yeah, and I'm going to take the credit because I did it. Absolutely. Not you, Mr. Contractor. I'm going to.
I agree with you.
But if I let you take that credit, will you give me more work?
Sure. Will the IRS be happy that we have this discussion and would take complaints should they wish to file with us?
I guess what they want to...
License practice?
I would guess what the IRS wants to know is, do we consider, and I don't know if we can provide an opinion or not, does the IRS, without a complaint, maybe not, does the board think that a contractor changing the type of retaining wall structure and changing beams and other things constitutes the practice of engineering? They're claiming they did it, they designed it. Whether that's true or not, that's another thing. They're claiming they did it. Do we think that's the practice of engineering or not?
I think we should send the IRS our definitions and say, you tell us, file a complaint.
But it's also research coming up with new ideas. They're just changing it because they think it's better to have concrete instead of steel. That's not necessarily a new idea or research.
Correct.
They're looking for something. This IRS stuff is looking for something specific.
Here's the thing.
Some new way of doing something. Yeah,
this research and development credit happens at the beginning of the work. It's in the programming phase. You're thinking of things. It's conceptual design, schematic design, design development in there. Once it gets to construction documents, you're not researching and developing anything. And certainly when you get in construction, I don't get any credit for that. My tax guy said, nope, all that time you spent and all that money you spent, you do not get a tax credit for construction phase.
Right.
It's at the front end.
Because
so that's even more
design,
of a,
right?
More of a, to support what you said.
Yeah. Well, my take on it is, one, if you're changing the type of retaining structure or type of structure, that is engineering practice.
Yep.
And then secondly, they're claiming that it's okay to practice engineering. They're saying they can practice because they're part of a design team that includes an engineer. I think my take is ARS 32144 says professions regulated by the board may be practiced without, this is the exemptions from the registration, can be practiced without a license by, and one of them is an employee of a registrant or of a person exempt from registration. If such an employment does not involve direct responsibility for design, inspection, supervision, so you have to be an employee of a registrant to be able to practice without a license. And if they don't have any engineers and staff and are practicing, then it's problematic.
Yeah. So yeah, I wonder if they're missing some words in there.
You did the right thing. Good job, IRS. I don't know that I want to put my name on that letter.
You don't want to say you did a bad job.
Yeah.
Well, so I think that part of the reason, I could be wrong here, but part of the reason they can't file complaints because this is confidential information, tax information, I don't know. So they might not be able, because you see they redacted the names from all the stuff they sent us.
Yes.
That's a good point.
So if that's the case where they can't bring a specific complaint, would we be able to send, I don't know, whether it's a letter to the IRS or an opinion or a letter to contractors, or more indirectly respond and saying, you know, designing is the practice of engineering and you can only do it if you're a PE or you're an employee of a PE, and anybody else who's not does fall under that category should not be doing design and it's outside our... Because then we're not taking a position in their specific case, we're just saying what constitutes engineering.
I think if we're going to send them anything, let's bundle up what's existing and say, here's the rules.
Yeah, just parrot them back what the statute says, and don't add any more or take away anything.
But I don't know, do we have to send them anything? I'm kind of confused on the whole thing.
We just discussed it today. I
don't know. We can ask them. I mean, we can tell them to refer to the audio if you want, and then we can go from there.
Who sent us this?
I don't think the name is in there, is it?
It was Alejandro.
Well, I didn't make it up. It was, like I said, I got an email from the IRS and I freaked out.
Well, you know, part of what's missing is part of this, when you said we're part of a design team, so it's okay. Maybe the words that are missing in there is it's design assist because I know I work with CM at risk contracts. You know, that's why you bring the contractor in.
Yeah, they give you ideas.
They give you ideas. You kick the things around. You make sure you're in budget, and then I go and draw pictures.
And you do your sheet, and you stamp it.
I stamp it.
Do they want us to help them keep general contractors?
Yeah, that's probably, and they're just misunderstanding.
Or should we tell them if general contractors working for a registrant, they don't need to be registered and could probably claim the tax credit? I mean, what do they want? I don't know.
I think the question is whether this is the practice of engineering. And whether they can practice engineering. If it is a practice of engineering, then the second question is,
can
they practice?
Can we go after contractors?
We could if we knew who it was and we had a specific complaint.
We could, okay.
Do I understand it right, though, that the IRS has a PE or one or more on staff? So there should be somebody there that could read a definition and say, yes, for our purposes, this is engineering.
He's done that, and I think that's part of the, you know, there's some stuff in there that says this is what the service of the IRS responded. And they actually get fairly technical in there, but taxpayer is disputing it. I think what they want is some support of their position from the board.
The IRS.
I see. Want support for their position. The IRS position is that they can't practice engineering because they're not registered, and therefore they can't claim the credit.
I think we'd need a complaint to do that then. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think we'd need a complaint to go through and say these people are practicing engineering. I don't think we can specifically give them that for a case, but
okay.
We could mail them the definition.
Did you guys figure it out?
Scott, speak
up. We can't hear you, Dan.
Certainly, my concern would be we're getting awfully close to issuing an advisory opinion where we don't actually have all the facts underlying the case, which could then wind up causing problems. So I'd be careful about going too far down the road, developing an opinion based on just the limited information we have.
And we don't have statutory authority to issue advisory opinion.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All in favor?
There you go.
Okay. So what are we saying? We can't do anything, or can we send a general letter back saying, thank you, review your concerns. We don't know the facts from the case, but we would refer you to the definition of the practice of engineering to determine if this is engineering, and then we would refer you to 32144 exemptions to identify who other than a registered engineer can practice engineering.
If you have a specific complaint, please feel free to contact us with the details and we can
investigate.
I think why don't we draft up and have something for the board to look at? Is that where we're going with this?
Draft a letter for your signature next month.
The next month?
That'd be great.
Or in December.
Okay.
You can sign it too, Neil.
I'll sign it. Okay. You need a stamp on it.
Like
they don't make
enough
money already.
God. Yeah. All right. Anything else on 9A? Okay, 9C. Whether to continue licensing firms. Who wants to start a discussion on this?
I'll break the ice. I don't have any personal interest in the outcome of this, but I am always confounded, and we've had cases come in front of the board about sole proprietorships, where the poor fellow, he was registered, he's licensed to practice, and then, I forgot, I'm also a professional corporation, I'm a PC, and I should have gotten a license for my PC, and so we end up giving him a violation or a warning. It's those singular cases that kind of stand out to me for the short time I've been on the board that have wound up in disciplinary confusion and action. typically, if you work for, you know, more than one professional is in your corporation, then, or for that matter, there are non-professionals also in your corporation, I would think that the entity should be recognized as a licensed firm, because I would want the principal of the firm to be held accountable to the board. Somebody's got to be at the top of the chain of command, whoever is running the organization. So that's just my two cents on this, is to see, is there a way in which we can distinguish between sole proprietorships and then multi-party, you know, or larger entities that have both professionals and non-professionals working in a professional firm, engineering, surveying, whatever.
The question is, how quickly does a sole proprietor go to being more than one, and would they know to get registered at that time?
So Tina was there on Friday night, so I talked to the AIA membership. There's about 400 people there, and I made a point to say, okay, you guys, and I told you guys, asked you for permission last month if it would.
I remember.
You should never point. But Japanese, you point like this. It's okay to do that. So I made a point to tell the membership that if you are a sole proprietor, sole practitioner holding a license, Arizona license, you need to register yourself as a firm. It is the most overlooked issue in Arizona. Some of you know about it. Most of you don't. So I urge you to go down and register yourself sooner than later, because you do not want to be sitting in this boardroom getting spanked later on when somebody turns you in. And believe me, people came up to me afterwards and went, what? They don't know about it. They don't know about it. And that's why, you know, we talked about putting it in the newsletter. That's why I brought this up last month. I'm all for licensing the firms. You know, I have no problem with that. But it's just these one-man offices, one-person offices, excuse me, are unaware of the...
It's so interesting to me, because having done the session law research, I mean, this board and the registration of engineers and architects began in 1921. We began registering firms in some form in 1935. And then subsequently, from the 50s, the 60s, the 80s, the 90s, and the early 2000s, the firm statute was modified numerous times. So for the public not to know that.
AI Arizona president didn't know.
Wow.
So it's just, I'm just saying, people don't know about it. And we need to get the word out, so I got the word out.
Good.
You know, maybe when you guys go and talk to the university students, you know, just throw it out there, because that's how they kind of start out, you know, in the third bedroom of their house. So anyway, that's that. I did what I needed to do.
Jones Design is registered, of course.
Is it?
I don't know. Am I? I'm always looking on that canceled list. So, I'm never sure.
Well, GL says you've only been practicing for 2 years, so.
Not enough experience. Do we even have any, do we have the ability to make changes to firm registration, or is it in statute or rule?
Statutes.
So we'd have to modify a statute to stop registering firms.
I mean, it can be done. We could
just keep it
find
way
a sponsor,
it's
draft
fine.
Amendments, and
just keep putting it in the newsletter.
Yeah, you got to
probably
agree to be more lenient.
Yeah, agree to be more lenient, maybe.
It seems so, too. I think that the discipline should be extremely minor. I mean, because the oversight is just so common. It's not like it's deliberate. It's just they actually thought by registering and licensing themselves as a sole proprietor, they were complying with the law.
I think that's a good point. Discipline, I mean, unless there's other issues that are serious, discipline should be
pretty
minimal.
Letter of concern,
maybe.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I mean, Kurt had a suggestion to go back and look at our firm registration form, make sure it's clear on the website, maybe post it on Facebook, put it on...
Another idea was just the actual initial registration for just professionals, whatever, and it just says that you know, would like to be a sole proprietor or plan to be one, make sure to, it's just right there on their initial registration form.
So is it crystal clear then, when I'm reading that
oh, I can use just firm registered, and I don't have to register myself individually? Is it crystal clear?
I don't think it's there right now. I'm just saying we can include such language. There's, you know, if just in bold or in little, you know, note, please.
Two registrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we should try to do as much education as we can for people, whether it's the newsletter, presentations, and then I think, as Gene put it, be very lean.
Yeah. If there's mitigating.
If they're mitigating.
If they're mitigating
circumstances. If it's unintentional and then it's, we should be fairly lenient on that.
So building on Kurt's idea, why not at renewals when somebody does their personal registration, why don't we ask them, who is the responsible registrant at your firm? Just ask them that question. Or is there a responsible registrant or something to that effect? So they say, huh? What? What the heck is that?
That's a good point.
Okay.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, or if employed, what's your firm registration number? And if they can't provide one, then they'll probably go to somebody in the office and say, hey, how come we don't have a number?
That'd be good to ask for that number.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect, yeah.
Point. Then every registrant point. Is made aware of the concept, and if they switch midstream, they can.
You can put the firm registration
enhancement
on the application, and you know
enhancement.
Enhancement. 50 grand right there.
Yeah.
And it would be an enhancement because we did not include that in the initial.
Oh my gosh.
Right. Okay, so are we sort of thinking that, do we need to take action here, Melissa, or no?
No, I think these are great suggestions. Education. Kurt and I and Rob will take a look at the forms and add whatever we can this time to see if it makes a difference. And then, you know, when you guys hear complaints, we'll just ask for mitigating information and see what if it makes a difference. So if any of you do speak, like our registered architect here did, to groups, yeah, just maybe say what Neil said and remind them that we have a legal requirement that they work for a registered firm. So, cool.
Got it. Okay, next we're moving on to item 9D. Observing ABET discussions. I think Mr. Montgomery is going to lead this discussion.
Well, I brought this issue up at our last, the end of, actually after the close of our last meeting. So I'll recap. The major points that I wanted to make here was simply that ABET historically had been created with the purpose of providing uniformity in engineering programs for use by state boards in the licensing for practice in engineering throughout the United States. And in order to relieve the board of that duty, they designated ABET as the National Accreditation Board for Engineering and Technology, and it's actually grown now to include computer science and other allied technical areas. And over the course of the many years since ABET was created, the mission statement had diverged from purely professional engineering practice and had gotten into areas of more academic excellence, and what the members of the ABET board, some of which were not even PEs, had perceived as engineering excellence. And so I think maybe 10 or a dozen years ago, I know that the National Council had tried to get back in with ABET and have representation on the ABET board for input to the process of accreditation. And that's been very beneficial, and I applaud them for that. What we had done back in New York State was, as ABET came to visit our state institutions of engineering for accreditation, we would be a non-voting member of the ABET audit team, so that we would be participating in the discussions with the voting members of ABET at the college to discuss what we see as the weaknesses and strengths of the particular engineering programs as they pertain to professional practice. So it was our opportunity to influence the membership of the ABET team for voting for or against accreditation of a particular curriculum, civil, electrical, mechanical, chemical, what have you, at the university. And it had proven out to be, you know, pretty timely, because ABET is, I don't know how familiar some of you are with it, they're continually evolving their criteria as to what they see as engineering excellence in a particular program for accreditation. So, in fact, I'm trying to remember, back in 2000, they came up with a major revision of their program, less prescriptive or proscriptive, and more interpretive, and they created capstone projects and other types of interpretive measures so that the engineering graduates would essentially be perceived as qualified or you know, able to be accredited by ABET for the degree that they were granted. And this is continuing to evolve right to this very day. So ABET is always tinkering with, you know, the total number of credits, the total number of course content, the emphasis in different areas of study. You know, they may throw out something and add something in its place. I don't want to be facetious and say that they're watering the programs down, but it's been a common criticism by non-participants that ABET has steered the core courses away. And I've heard this complaint from old-timers, you know, people who went to school 40 years ago and said that, you know, the curriculum today doesn't look like anything like what we studied when we were back, you know, in engineering. So I just wanted to throw it out to the board. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to reach out to them, but they normally have a calendar, an annual calendar, of their scheduled visits to institutions throughout the country, of course, but within the state of Arizona. I assume we have probably less than half a dozen total engineering universities here. I'm not quite sure if that's too generous, maybe. But it shouldn't be a large population. But it's just a suggestion to the board. Obviously, like anything else, it's a time commitment, and you know, and an incremental monetary commitment. Obviously, you know, you have to pay, because they won't. I mean, if you're in, you know, I don't know, I guess what we have, the furthest, how far is the furthest university from Phoenix? I'm not sure.
Flagstaff, Prescott.
Yeah.
Flagstaff.
So if it would require, an overnight, you know, a stay away from home is what I'm getting at. So then there would be otherwise it would just be a day trip. So if I were to go to Tempe, you know, from Phoenix, it's, you know, the only course that's involved is just the, you know, traveling from the campus and back home. That's it. It's very, very nominal.
And generally, $30 a day for your board
service. And for the board service. I mean, generally, the ABET team is wined and dined wherever they go. These folks are well taken care of by the chancellor at the university, the university president. They're very much interested in seeing that they're given the royal treatment while they're there. So there isn't any monetary expense while being on the team, namely, you know, whatever, breakfast, lunch, dinner type of thing. That's all taken care of by the university who's sponsoring the accreditation.
So this is something we should recommend to the schools, that they do this.
No. It's really ABET. ABET is the one that sets up the audits. And the schools they elicit it. They go to ABET and they say, we want to be accredited
for
our civil engineering program. Please come and audit us.
Right.
They have a national center, put together a team. And it's mostly academics, so there'll be professors and maybe one or two industry representatives, but mostly professors from other universities throughout the country who will come and then review their curriculum. They'll be making submittals to the ABET folks long before they arrive on campus.
So do we know if the Arizona universities have done this?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
They have.
Yeah. They all have. They all
have. We have at least three ABET accredited. The state schools are all
I think there's more, yeah. There's the three state ones. Yeah. There's Grand Canyon, I think.
Right.
There's
Grand Canyon.
And Prescott, what's it called?
Embry-Riddle
Aeronautical.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But I guess it's more about an issue. We can ask to be invited and then decide to attend or decline depending on time availability, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Our presence is not mandatory.
Right. As
our presence is, as I said, to be a non-voting member on the other team. But at least it gives us the opportunity, because they meet multiple times during the day to discuss findings of fact and reach certain conclusions, to give them our unsolicited input, if you would, as to what we've seen. And I think I mentioned, you know, to you, Jason, I mean, I had been to some universities in the state of New York. I mean, their laboratory facilities were decades old. They hadn't invested money in their infrastructure, and they were teaching students on what I thought were, you know, were obsolescence. This is all obsolescence. Everything here is really not meaningful in a practicing engineer today who goes out in the work world, and you need to invest more money in your infrastructure. So, and so we actually decline them accreditation. You know, yeah, it can be painful if you don't invest enough money in your own infrastructure, your own, you know, school, that there's a downside. So typically, though, they're more than anxious to get that, because more and more people today are becoming aware of the importance of ABET. I'll be so bold as to go one step further and say at APS out of Palo Verde, we will not bring in an applicant for employment unless they have an ABET degree. And that's really a high bar, and we just set that up. I'm talking about a new graduate, not an old time employee. A new graduate, right? A recent graduate. Yeah. Yeah.
How long have you been on the board?
4 years.
Mm. I thought you were a retired mechanical engineer.
He was at the tour. It obviously affects.
I've retired once, and then I came to work as Palo Verde in my retirement. Yes. No. But that's just a singular example. But I'm saying, I mean, our board gives additional credit to ABET degrees. I mean, so it does have weight, and I think it's important. But I obviously, you know, have limited expertise, so it would involve the other engineers on the board as well, if they want participation. I don't know if ABET. I think right now they're pretty. They also accredit technology programs as well. Yeah. So it's a pretty broad base of programs.
And surveying programs too, I think. If not here, because we don't have one, but elsewhere. And I know there's one state that has an ABET accredited geology degree. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know.
So what's what are we asking staff to do?
Asking staff to do is to reach out, maybe probably through our contacts with NCEs, to get
just contact ABET directly.
Contact ABET directly.
And suggest that since we regulate the practice of engineering in Arizona, we want to make sure, and half of that experience we give is based in education, we believe it's important that we at least participate as observers in their ABET reviews, and we appreciate an opportunity to participate.
Let me ask this question. Is there already the opportunity, I mean, if you go to their website or talk to somebody there, is there a place to say, are you interested in volunteering for this?
I don't know.
It's a pretty closed group. I mean,
And if you're actually an evaluator, you have to go through some trainings and other things.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really intense. I was surprised participating in it that, you know, the on-campus or on-site review team only makes recommendations to a national board. So there's another level of review. So if you were to decline accreditation or give accreditation, you would have to be second-guessed now by yet another level of approval at the national level. So they go through a very rigorous vetting process before they, you know, it's sort of like awarding, you know, diamonds or pearls out. You know, when they give that accreditation, it's a big to-do. It's a big thing. So I think participating in it, you know, elevates us as a board to getting engaged and getting recognition. You'd be surprised how, you know, the faculty paid a lot more attention to the state board when I was there. Because many of the faculty members are not licensed engineers.
Right. That's right.
So when they see licensed engineers showing up, they perk up. So they become a little bit more sensitized to the relationship between accreditation and licensure.
That's a good, Jason, just think, you know, you live in Kingman. You can get here faster than you can get to Palo Verde.
So I don't know if I can.
No, I don't live in Palo Verde.
So far away.
Yeah, it's pretty far.
Okay, so all right. I have it down to check the event website and see what I can find out there and perhaps write a letter asking if our board could be part of
it. Can be part of the order team. Yes.
Yeah, the order.
Thank you, Moses.
Thank you. Okay, item 9E. This is alarm agent renewal issues. Staff, who wants to describe the issue? Somebody doesn't have a clearance yet. Who wants to be certified?
I'll describe the issue. The law passed that alarm agents have to have clearance cards to get licensed in the first place and in order to renew. So we're going to have some folks that you approved in the past who are alarm agents who aren't going to get a clearance card on their first round. They have for clearance cards, they pretty much look back and what, you know, if you have any list of certain crimes, you're going to get denied. So on their first round, they're going to get denied, but we just wanted to let you know, that's not the end of the road for them. What they do then is they apply to the fingerprint board to get an exemption. So they just need to get their denial letter from the clearance card, letter from the court saying this person's had no other problems. Submit it to the fingerprint board, and I talked to the director there, and they said, it's fast. They zip them right through once they provide those documents. So just, it's an FYI to let you guys know that some alarm agents are going to hit a bump in the road if they have a criminal history, and they're going to have to go through this extra step to get that exemption.
Okay. Did you need guidance or guidance from the AG? It seemed, or has that gone away? Do we need to renew prior to getting clearance? Or are we just going to hold off until it goes through the fingerprint board before we give renew?
I think it's safest to get the car exemption before renewal, simply because there's always the risk if you grant it and haven't got the card yet, that something may turn up and if something happens.
It's hard to change. Yeah.
And on a similar note, we're having interesting issues with controlling persons because prior to last year's legislative change, controlling persons were part of the firm registration, and now they have their own separate registration. So we've seen a drop in firm registrations because they are now required to have their controlling person get registered before the firm gets registered. So we may see more disciplinary cases against alarm firms because of that. So yeah, nuances with unintended consequences.
But to let you know, we started well ahead of time, sending out letters to the firm's controlling person and putting out emails and putting out Facebook and putting on our website. These changes in law are coming. Make sure your controlling person applies for the clearance card ahead of time. Don't wait. Same thing with alarm agents. Make sure you do this ahead of time. So we've done our best to educate them. So if they're paying attention, they should be ahead of it. If you're not paying attention, they'll be behind.
Okay, but no change needed at this point. We're just going to get clearance first and then issue renewals.
Yes.
Okay. Item 9F, whether to endorse NCARB's Tri-National Mutual Recognition Agreement for the International Practice of Architecture.
Is that a joke?
Mr. So are you, Melissa.
So they sent the letter to Ed. They still think Ed is the chairman of the board.
Yeah.
He's an architect. Don't take it personally, y'all.
That's okay.
Okay. And apparently, we had said yes, that this was okay, back some time ago. So now they're just sending us the formal agreement. I don't think it's a problem to endorse it, because without it, we would still register international architects if they meet our statutory requirements. And so far, that is in our exam exemption statute that says if you've been working 10 out of the past 15 years in another jurisdiction or foreign country, you qualify for registration in Arizona. But before we conclude that, I thought I would bring it to you and let you hash it out.
Any thoughts from our architect members?
And really what they're doing, in my opinion, NCARB wants all these foreign candidates to apply for their international blue cover equivalent certificate. So they're effectively, if they do that, going to be coming to us as a certificate holder, which we grant registration to anyway. It's just another way for NCARB to say, oh, all the states have signed on and we get to charge these candidates lots of money to get one of our NCARB certificates. But they assure us that they'll have properly vetted all those candidates. And
has Ed said anything or weighed in?
Ed just asked if I would put it on the agenda. So,
so if they get that approval, they're already
qualified for registration. Yeah, they'd be qualified like any new applicant we would get who has an NCARB certificate.
So that means they've taken the exams or whatever they've done.
Or the equivalent. And what they're doing with international candidates is determining equivalency. So I mean, we don't have to sign on. But if you want to, here's an opportunity.
Did Ed make any objections or anything?
No, no. Ed loves NCARB.
Ed's Mr. NCARB.
I'd move that we endorse it, but tell Ed we didn't. I move we endorse it.
Okay.
It needs a vote.
Do they get automatically approved then? Is that what happens?
It's an approval that I can make.
So it says here that we're not going to require any additional education, experience, examination requirements, or required to provide transcripts, experience verifications, examination scores, or government IDs. So we're not even going to ask for experience verifications or anything like that? I guess our references are not experience verifications, are they? I mean, what would be, right, if we have somebody who comes with an NCES number, we still ask him to provide three reference letters, do we not? Nothing. Okay.
That's, yeah, because the information is contained in the certificate.
Okay.
So we'll have something from a supervisor, and, you know, he describes what work he's done the past year, that sort of thing.
Is the government ID tricky? Did I hear that in there?
Yes.
We would, if they're in the country legally, our form's pretty long, so there's like 13 different things they can check. One, that they're here as an American citizen, one, they're here on a visa, one, they are not planning to practice in the States, so they can live in Mexico or internationally and obtain our registration without living here. That's a possibility. Okay. So, but I mean, they would have to fill out our form.
If the state says we require something, we require it regardless of the agreement.
Right.
We'll just go ahead and do that.
Okay. Did you make a motion?
I did.
Did we get a second?
Second. Come on, a little
heard,
Neil.
Come on. Didn't hear that.
They're going to do all the
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right.
Neil's opposed.
Wait, we're almost there.
We got it seconded?
Yeah.
Steve.
Director's report.
Oh, wait. I forgot about that.
Should we table it?
If you wish, I don't need to add anything more. Here's all the stuff. Jason would be so proud of you, Anthony.
No kidding.
Yes, I don't need to say anything.
Sick of hearing about this computer system.
We are pursuing a demand letter with the GL Solutions, our computer vendor. It's just, it's 2 months, and since we've gone live, and the only thing that's working pretty much consistently is a person's ability to do a registrant search on the web, which we already had working previously. So I've had some trouble getting a hold of the woman from state procurement because so many other agencies are having problems with their computer issues that she's been pretty bogged down. But I think we seriously need to document our concerns and the continued effort of staff to report things that aren't working and pursue remedies or at least a serious plan with deadlines for when everything will be working. So I wish I had better news, but I don't. And you've seen the numbers from this month's director's report for licensing. We're still not able to report figures accurately. Mm-hmm. I think these two columns in the licensing report are okay, but I'm not confident that they're even accurate. The enforcement numbers, I think Doug was able to pull off the your own access spreadsheets, right? Versus GL.
I think they're pretty close.
Not cool.
Yeah. Not after spending $1 million+.
We have other options. If we do have to cancel GL, the state will ask them for money back. And we can revert to our previous computer system, which doesn't really give us anything. I'm hoping GL will work, and we're pursuing statewide options like going with Deloitte and their program Salesforce. We would be a second phase agency to join that. Ideally, yeah, we would love GL to work, but it's very frustrating for staff.
There is one good thing that we can do now that we couldn't do before is licensing could see enforcement actions. So in the past, we'd get a license before licensing knew that, oh, by the way, they have an enforcement action. So that's working where they can look and see that the controlling person actually had disciplinary action last year for aiding and abetting. So that's a big step forward.
Yes. But you'll see with regard to our budget, we apparently had this whole year to keep spending the $800,000 we got as part of our appropriation for FY17, and we're not sending them any more money until they can ensure they're sending us corrected issues. And the problem, in my opinion, is that they haven't been able to retain qualified staff. They hire people who come in, know nothing about what our board does, which is it's similar in terms of the mission to other agencies that GL has worked with, but we're way more complicated because we're like 7 boards in one. And they just clearly don't understand our processes. So that's made for a lot of extra work for staff to explain what it is they're proposing as an enhancement, which pretty clearly is a defect to us. But because their staff is new, they just don't understand.
That lady still work there.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's a go-to to person. Right, and she understands, which, you know, makes it hard for me to yell, which I don't do, but, you know, speak firmly. Yeah. It's hard because she completely understands our frustration.
She can't push it up the ladder?
Well, she's like the second from the top.
She is the ladder.
So we have Bill, and Bill sees what comes from his new employees saying, these are enhancements, we should be charging BTR, you know, X hundreds of thousands of dollars more for these things they want. And, yeah, so we have to explain, it's not an enhancement, it's a defect. This is the man who told me that he's delivered a system, even if it's broken, it's still delivered. And I'm like, dude, that so doesn't fly, so.
But Marcy does help. Mm-hmm. I took a number of enhancements to her. She looked at them and said, you're right, those aren't enhancements, those are defects. So, you know, thank goodness she is there. There's someone right. We can move up.
Yeah. You still get a monthly invoice anyway?
Yeah, they'll send us invoices for individual projects, basically. Mm-hmm. So we had to make a change to the alarm industry information because the statute changed. And we got an invoice for that. And, you know, there are some things we definitely have to pay for, like sure. The statute change, which I'm fine with paying if it's going to build us something that works. But, you know, at this point, we've sent them a lot of money, and I'm not inclined, and Asset agrees not to send them any more until they've delivered us a working system. So it's frustrating because we would love to allow renewals, at least, with credit card payments, but I can't give you guys a deadline. And I've seriously asked for it at least 3 times in the past 2 weeks. So, anyway.
Melissa, and you had a $65,000 figure in there for enhancements?
For this coming year, correct.
For this coming year.
And that's why Patty and I spoke with Asset yesterday, and we have a verbal approval for that because they understand our problem with GL. Apparently they're having issues with another state agency as well. So I'm hoping we won't need it, but if we do, I'm confident we'll get it in our budget.
Okay.
So,
and just an explanation, that's for new things.
Right.
Things we didn't think of in the first place, but we see it can be helpful, or if there's a legislative change, we'll have the money to deal with it.
Andrew makes the best chili, according to the popular vote here. So his secret apparently is chocolate. He puts chocolate in his chili. Who knew? And Doug came in second, and he puts coffee in his. So, yeah.
Those both work.
So enforcement totally dominated the food at our chili cook-off. Yeah, it was fun.
Andrew had a lot of pressure because he's like the chef.
Yeah.
Like well, he referred to himself as a chef.
He rose to the occasion. People really liked
pressure.
It. I was asked to speak at ASU Law School. They apparently have a continuing series for third year students, and I've been asked to speak about government jobs for lawyers. So, and interestingly enough, this Thursday I'm going to view the first lecture, which will be given by the Governor's Chief of Staff and Andy Tobin, who's one of our Corporation Commissioners. So I said I needed to go just to see the lay of the land, and they said, the more the merrier. So we'll see if Mr. Lomberti, the Governor's Chief of Staff, lets anything slip about the Governor's plans for the upcoming legislative session. The title of their little lecture is Executive Authority. So
Tina, do you want to let Melissa know?
No, I can't
do it.
Yes, you can.
You don't even know because you weren't listening.
What, did that project won an honor award on Friday night?
Did it really?
You were law school?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Very so cool.
Yeah.
Even though there aren't enough ladies' rooms?
There are. You know where to park?
No, I'm supposed to get a code that lets me in somewhere, but I haven't gotten it yet.
Underground parking garage.
Okay. So cool.
Good.
You want to come?
No.
No? Okay. Anyway, so that's upcoming trouble I'm going to cause. And then Westcarb sent us the dues statement, and we got a nice letter from the current president saying that they think our issue about regional dues is serious enough to warrant discussion. So they haven't said yes, but they haven't said no, and I don't know, I'm kind of inclined not to pay West Park dues until the very last minute, or not at all.
See what happens.
Yeah, we'll see, and of course it'll be up to you since the board is the member. I am not, but, you know, I'm not shy.
So I met Greg
a
couple of weeks ago at West Vermont Region meeting that we had. I didn't know he was an NCAR president, though. But what he did tell me, he's been on the Nevada State Board, they just did limits. He's been on it for 18 years. Wow.
Yep.
Can you imagine?
Yep.
He loves it.
Oh,
now
yeah.
they're doing these term limits, so he gets... just got reappointed before the new rule went in, so I think he's on another 4 years or three.
Another 18 years.
Woohoo!
Mm-hmm. God, isn't that
okay,
amazing?
So we'll keep
thank God for term limits.
Thank God. Yeah.
And CLARB increased their dues, which I think was pretty sneaky of them. I objected, but they did it anyway, even though they're spending down their reserves, which, you know, I asked that question, but no one seemed to understand why there should be a dues increase when you're spending your reserves, but they still increased our dues. NCWS was very quiet this month. I have nothing new to report there. And I wanted to know if you guys want to re-up your Canadian Securities membership. We did this when Eric was on the board because mining, and he was very into it. I don't know that we were ever members before Eric, and I don't know that we need to continue to be members, but I thought I'd see what you guys thought.
I wouldn't think so.
All we need to do is fill out a questionnaire, right?
It's like 7 pages of in-depth questioning.
I'm sure Eric knows the answers, right?
I don't know. I attached it for you guys to look at. I guess I could ask
Eric. It's a pretty detailed questionnaire, but...
Yeah. I'll ask Eric.
If he's willing to do it, I mean, we do need a volunteer to fill it out, I think.
He'd be the one.
Or maybe a trained geologist, I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we know enough about it to see whether it's important or not.
You're asking for specific examples of projects, too.
Yeah, we're on the agenda for some things so we can discuss it. Okay. So we'll put that on for discussion, and if Eric wants it, I'll ask him next week.
Yeah, maybe he can take a crack at the questionnaire so we have it for next board meeting.
Cool. And that's all I have, gentlemen.
That's all you have, okay.
That's all I, unless you have questions.
No one? Anybody? Questions?
I can add one thing. I'll be gone for 2.5 weeks, gosh darn.
Right.
So let you all
know
the
audio.
I won't have
anyone
to review my emails before I push send.
Yeah, she's not allowed to write any emails. Unless Alejandra was.
Yeah. What does she do now?
I'll pick you up from.
All right, cool. Standing committee reports, Eleanor.
I think you skipped
we
one.
We can schedule a meeting.
Did
this
I skip one?
Much
oh, board chair's report, I'm sorry.
Yes.
How convenient.
I don't have anything to report.
It's his first day. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's first day on the job.
I think I would like to write, when we do the next newsletter,
great.
I'd like to write something. I think, and I don't know if we've already done something on EACs. I mean, just maybe a mix of things, talking about EACs, maybe expert witness would be something to talk about, firm registration, just cover a few things quickly on the first page.
That'd be great. Okay. And we did publish the newsletter. I don't know if you received.
Yeah, I did.
And it's on our website, so.
Which is not connected to the computer.
Right. Standing committees, Eleanor?
We can schedule a meeting if you wish.
Eleanor, you mean?
Yeah, Eleanor. We had a survey question. I actually asked Jay Poo about it already. But and then if you want to discuss the unforeseen consequences of the substantive policy statement.
That's not what we need to call it. I just wanted, you know, somebody to look at it and make sure there's, that it's going to be okay. So, yeah, I think it'd be good to have them get together and discuss that.
Okay.
And, again, I think some sort of stakeholder input would be appropriate for people who participate in litigations, whether it's expert witnesses or agencies or attorney firms.
Keep Doug talking about it.
Yeah. Well, actually, I asked Doug if he would, because traditionally board members who term out have been invited to participate on L&R. And at the time, he was really busy, but that was last year, so maybe this year he's not as busy. And I was thinking to ask Leroy to stay on, because Leroy was part of it as well. So.
John would buy him a Mediterranean dinner.
Yeah.
We could do Mexican if you want.
We'll bring one Mexican for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Home inspector rules and standards?
Do we have a meeting?
Next month.
Next month.
I believe it's the 16th. And are you on that now? Not necessarily. I didn't know if the chair was on.
Jay Mack can stay.
He stays?
Yeah. It just says two board members.
I'm not in any committees. Okay. Board member report and outside activities. ASBOG. Well,
you're going to Portland.
Going to Portland.
Going to Portland.
J-Food.
Next week.
Yeah,
J-Food. Rob, I and Melissa. I will be a trained geologist surveyor.
By the time you get back, yeah.
Revenue engineer.
Trained for the day.
All right.
Okay. CLARB?
Nothing new with CLARB.
And CLARB. Okay. And CES? They closed the year with a huge surplus. I'm on the finance committee. So they made $5 million just in exams. Then more than they thought. And then another five or so on their portfolio. But they're complaining about money, so anyway. Yeah.
Poor Finney broke to five.
Poor Finney got to five. So,
the big nickel was.
Big nickel, that's right. Yeah. Big nickel.
So in January we have a finance committee and see how that goes.
And how are you gonna recommend they do something with that excess? Or?
I will again. I did this year because they have a $60 million portfolio and they assume that it's not going to generate any money. It's going to make 0.3%. Nobody put $60 million to work to make 0.3%. So
cool.
We'll see. Future board meetings, December 12th, no November meeting. Suggested topic for future meetings, anything?
The IRS letter.
Wasn't there something, the ASBOG stuff we were going to agendize?
Oh, right, ASBOG stuff.
Anything else for future meetings?
Just a quick note to Kurt. When do you anticipate getting an agenda out, since we're 2 weeks early? Probably towards the end of November, on December?
I would actually just plan to the 2 weeks out beforehand, like usual, but again,
okay.
I think that's what the law says, 2 weeks out.
So yeah, so expect it like the last week of November.
Yeah, so we'll have enough time to look at it. It won't be like
it won't be
on
last
the
minute.
10th or something. Okay.
Yeah. Do you want me to bring up the possibility of a coffee urn? Because that coffee maker over there is a bit wonky that it leaks everywhere. It doesn't hold enough coffee for all the members.
Yeah.
And so just doing research, I have looked at purchasing a coffee urn that can hold up to 42 cups, the percolator, $38. Were you interested?
Do it.
Let's do it.
Okay. I bought you new mugs. What'd you think?
Yeah.
I like it. It's ergonomically friendly.
Okay.
Yeah, let us know what you need for the coffee maker.
Thank you.
Or roll it in with the lunch.
Our
surplus. You win all these awards. I'm sure cash awards come with that.
No, they don't. And no new jobs come with it either.
Yeah, they do.
I've never, ever, ever, ever gotten a new job. The awards are good. Never.
Huh.
They don't get publicized.
Really?
It's not our, no.
Do you list them on your SOQs? Do you list the award on your SOQs?
Depending on which one, what if they were interested in that.
Yeah.
All right. I've never gotten.
Okay, anything else for today?
Thank you.
We're done.
Good job.
Good job. 30, 3.5 hours.